97.5, The Fanatic.
Testing team. You'll be introduced to our three-step system for flipping homes right here in the local area. This is Than Merrill, star of A&E's hit TV show Flip This House. My team and I are looking for a handful of people in the Philadelphia and Wilmington area who want to learn how to get started making money flipping houses in your spare time using other people's money. Philadelphia and Wilmington, perfect markets for my system. And next week, I'm holding a free two-hour educational workshop where we'll share how to get started making money flipping houses and how to build long-term wealth with income properties.
To get two free tickets to Than's workshop, text your five-digit zip code to 82,000. Seating is extremely limited, so text your five-digit zip code to 82,000. Text in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also reserve a free copy of Than's Money for Deals guide. Just text your zip code to 82,000.
If you owe money to the IRS, don't mess around. They can take everything from you. But the game changes when you have a team of tax experts on your side, like the professionals at Optima Tax Relief, who've earned an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They'll fight to protect your paycheck, assets, and everything you've worked so hard for by working to get you the best deal possible. Call Optima now for your free consultation.
Call 800-279-8755. 800-279-8755.
Optima Tax Relief.
For details, visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Guys, is Viagra letting you down? I'm Dr. Sloan, board-certified urologist at Philadelphia Urology Associates, and I'm treating men with Gainswave, a revolutionary ED treatment. Gainswave requires no shots, no pills, and you can be spontaneous again. To find out if Gainswave is right for you, schedule a free consultation with me at Philadelphia Urology Associates. Text the word CURE to 797979. That's CURE, C-U-R-E, to 797979.
What a night! Whether you're looking for some rock or a roll of the dice, whether world-class dining calls your name or a blackjack table, if you're into big jackpots or big bites, Parks is Pennsylvania's number one casino with brand new tables and slots, new restaurants, and the Excite Center featuring the hottest acts. The best is better than ever. Parks Casino. What a night.
Street Road exit off 95 in the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know Beasley Media for the massive radio brands in Philadelphia like 97.5 The Fanatic. But did you also know that we're experts in advertising and growing successful brands through digital? We can help create video commercials, put your ads on websites, and even create targeted social posts to reach your potential customers. Our team of brand builders can do that and so much more to help your business grow. Email Beasley Media Digital Team now at experts@bbgi.com. That's experts@bbgi.com.
The voice of the Philly sports fan, 97.5, The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia.
A Beasley Media Group station.
Home of the Sixers and Flyers.
Hope you're having a great Sunday out there in the across the Delaware Valley. 97.5 The Fanatic. Thanks for hanging out with us. I am Tyler Zuli, Josh Rabick producing the show. Pat Egan did a great job from 1 to 4. As always, Connor Thomas did a great job producing and co-hosting that show as well. A lot of fun listening to those guys. I do have to say before we get things started that there is a criminally underrated serial that Pat Egan brought up. That I need to have a much higher rating for, and the Cinnamon Toast Crunch needs to get a ton more respect than it does. Ton more respect.
It's a one seed.
Nah, it needs to be the number one overall seed.
It's a one seed.
I said I love Fruity Pebbles, but Cinnamon Toast Crunch needs to be the number
one. How much more respect
seed.
Do you want? It's a one seed.
The number one overall
Don't
seed.
Don't blame me. I didn't even do this list.
I got that. It's funny you say that, because I got flack the other day for putting my one bracket together that we will get into. And it was I took a rankings of the top 32 Super Bowl champions, and I put them into an NCAA-style bracket, and the 2017 Eagles were the 32 seed because they were ranked as the 32nd best Super Bowl team. And people were giving me crap saying, well, why are you ranking the Eagles as the 8 seed in their side of the region? I said, I didn't make the bracket. But I apologize. I thought it was a two seed. I apologize. I didn't realize it was a one seed. So never mind. You can scratch that from the record. 610-632.
Hit the dump button on that one.
610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli taking you up until 8 o'clock here on the Fanatic. So the NFL has officially passed its CBA. The NFLPA has officially passed the CBA today. It didn't pass by much. In fact, it passed by very little. And I got to tell you guys, I think that this was a horrible, horrible move for the players. Just a downright terrible move for these players, because you want to talk about player safety all the time. That's all we ever talk about anymore is the safety of the players. And yet here we are adding an additional contact game. And what I mean by contact game is because you can truly separate preseason from regular season. And with that being said, you are now taking away the easy game, which I know players don't like and no one likes to watch, but you're taking it away and you are effectively saying we are going to put another 60 minutes of toll, 60 minutes of wreckage on your body. You're going to get paid more, but as Josh Rabick pointed out before the show started, you're going to get paid more for the season, but per hour, per game, per quarter, whatever you want to break it down to, you're not getting paid more. You're making less per whatever than what you were for a 16-game schedule. Now, I understand that the preseason stinks. We all hate the preseason. Nobody wants to watch the fourth-string quarterback. Nobody wants to watch Christian Hackenberg play for the Eagles. It's bad product. But what it is one less taxing game on some of these big-time players' bodies. And so I think that in and of itself was a loss for the Players Association. I think what was a win for the Players Association, but was a loss for me, because as Pat Egan will point out to you, I hate fun, was adding another playoff team. I think adding a seventh playoff team in each league is a really bad decision. Because much like the college football playoff that I don't think should be expanded to eight teams, and I die alone on that hill too, I don't believe that you should be able to justify adding another 9-7 team into the playoffs, especially as a wild card team. 9-7 teams win divisions. The division is the standard of which that you play by. So when you play by the divisional standard, all you have to do is be better than these three teams in your division. Some years you have to win 13 games to win your division. The Seahawks were a wild card team with 11 wins. Some years, you have to win 7. The Seahawks were a division winner with 7. But when you put that into the scope for me, you are saying that these three teams are the teams that you have to directly compete with. And if you are directly competing with three teams, you know what your goal is. Whether that goal is 7 wins or 12 wins, you have a specific goal in mind. When you start adding wild card teams to the mix, another wild card team at 9-7 or 8-8, you get a 10-6 team, maybe we have a different conversation. But if you get an 8-8 wild card team or a 9-7 wild card team, especially a team that has another team from its division as a wild card team, because you're going to have that most likely. I mean, there is a scenario where you get one wild card team from each division, but more than likely you're going to get a second wild card team from a division that's already being represented in the wild card. So not only did you not win your division, you didn't even finish in second in your division. Are we really promoting mediocrity that much across the landscape of the NFL, the hardest league of them all, in terms of you've got to make every game count because there's only 16 of them and soon to be 17, but you're going to make every single game count, and now all of a sudden a 9-7 team is going to get in, or an 8-8 team is going to get into the playoffs for no reason in particular? I don't know. It seems criminally negligent to me to allow another team into the fold when there's some years where wildcard teams don't deserve to be in anyway. The landscape of the NFL standings is such that you can get a 9-7 wildcard team to begin with. Again, you can have an 11-5 wild card team. You can have teams travel across the country to play a division winner that won less games than they did. Happened this year. The Eagles had to play the Seahawks at home, or got to play the Seahawks at home, despite the fact that they not only lost to them in the regular season, but lost two extra games. Sometimes you get lucky like that as a divisional winner. But on the years that 10-6 is your second wild card team, now a third wild card team, 9-7? I can't buy into it. It really kind of worries me that we are promoting average. We're accepting average. We're accepting participation. Now, there's going to be years where people are going to go, Tyler, you're being really foolish because the 10-6 Eagles just missed the playoffs, and now they're going to make the playoffs as the 7 seed. But there's going to be years where I can't justifiably say the year that the Detroit Lions went 9-7, they would have been the next team up. That team stunk. I think that was Jim Schwartz's last season as their head coach. That team stunk. They would have been a playoff team. Go last year. Were either the LA Rams or the Pittsburgh Steelers playoff worthy? Because they'd have been your 2-7 seeds. I thought the Rams had so many holes. They were talented, but had so many holes. And quite honestly, Pittsburgh's defense at times deserved to be there. But I'm not putting a guy named Duck in the playoffs. It doesn't work for me. So if you've got any thoughts on the new CBA, which, by the way, I think was passed by, what, a 51-49 margin? I think something along those lines. We'll double check in a second. But if you've got thoughts either way on the new NFL CBA, let's discuss it over the next 4 hours. 610-632-0975. This tweet is pretty interesting. This tweet comes from Damon Harrison, otherwise known as Snacks. Said, y'all really sold the future for some weed and another game. That's telling that a former player is saying that they sold the future out. Now, on the flip side, I saw a tweet earlier in the day from, I believe it was Jeff Schwartz who tweeted this out, and kind of backed the players a little bit. You know, Jeff Schwartz, of course, almost 10 years in the NFL as an offensive lineman, but he tweeted, I got to go find this tweet, but he tweeted something along the lines of, when it comes down to crunch time, and they had this happen in 2011, when it comes down to crunch time, it's tough to say no. It's tough to not play. It's tough to really, truly hold out and not play and not get paid. Here's his tweet, because he quote tweeted Eric Ebron. Said, because Eric Ebron said, can't believe we agreed to that, LOL. We can only play this game for so long, and y'all didn't want everything we could get out of it. 2030, y'all better do better. So Jeff Schwartz quote tweets it and says, y'all willing to sit out a season to get what you want? This is the issue. The last CBA in 2011, NFL players talked a big game about sitting out, and when we sniffed the start of camp, players couldn't take it, and we agreed on a new CBA. NFL players should not feel this way. NFL players, you look at the NBA. NBA players have so much power. I mean, so much power. NFL players, not to the point of Major League Baseball, because Major League Baseball, you as a player, you've got nothing. Your hands are totally tied. NFL players should feel like they have more. So when a guy that was part of the NFLPA says that they got scared in 2011 because they felt like they weren't going to get their paychecks or they weren't going to get to play, that's telling. These guys had a chance to fight for more power, and Josh puts up it approved by 51.5%. That means almost half the league does not feel this is a good CBA. And I understand that it was a Democratic vote. You know, we live in a Democratic country where you can vote things yes or no, and that's how power gets put in place. And the majority of the players voted for it. Yes, it's a small majority, but the majority of players voted for it. But when 49% of your fellow brethren, your fellow players, the guys that you're standing side by side with and going up against in the trenches every week with, say they don't like this vote, I don't know how you don't reconsider. So this, to me, goes beyond schedule, and it goes beyond adding another playoff game. Because those are the two things that we as fans will talk about. Because you're either getting an extra home game or you're not, maybe it's a neutral site game, we get an extra week of meaning, quote-unquote meaningful football. And, of course, we're talking about the extra playoff team because now it keeps teams in the playoffs longer despite the fact that I don't really like it. The thing that we as fans are not going to discuss is the human side of the CBA. It's the human side of the CBA that 48.5% of the players voted no on. Listen, I don't get a vote. I'm not an NFL player. I don't belong to the NFLPA. My voice doesn't matter. It doesn't carry much weight for the NFL players. But I have to think I've got some concerns for the 48.5% of players that got a chance to vote that voted no on this.
And how many times do we see after they come to some type of CBA agreement that you see unity from the players? And now the real story starts because such a vast majority, or at least a big minority, do not agree with it.
Right. That's the thing. So is there going to be a split somewhere down the line, like a further split? Because you vote, you know, there's going to be probably some bad blood, but a vote is a vote. I mean, that's as democratic as it gets, giving the players a chance to vote. But when Game 17 rolls around, here's my, and I understand we're playing hypothetical, and it could happen just as easily in wild card week as it could in now week 18. But when Game 17 rolls around, and God forbid your quarterback goes out of the pocket and gets hurt, your left tackle gets hurt trying to protect your quarterback, he gets rolled up on, your linebacker gets hurt in coverage, any of these players get hurt, the 48.5% that voted no are going to be even more angry because now their guy just got hurt. Now their playoff chances just got took a huge dive. And it's not going to be the case, and this is the unfortunate part about all of these things, it's not going to be the case until the Buster Posey type player gets hurt. Guy gets hurt sliding into second base. Anybody remember the Pirates player that got hurt when the Mets player tried to break up a double play? Messed his leg up? Probably not. Anybody forget Buster Posey was the catcher that got hurt? No, you don't, because you know why? Because Buster Posey's a big name. The unfortunate part is it's probably going to be a big name that this comes back around.
And what's crazy, too, is it came down to two sides. One side was about the money and getting a higher revenue share, and the other side was about long-term health. We talked about this before the show. How many players have you seen that played for 10, 15 years in the league, now in their 50s, they're walking with that noticeable limp? They don't look like the superhuman that they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, I can't speak for all the athletes. There's got to be, and 48.5% may be the number, there's got to be a large majority or a large minority, as you said, of guys that are extremely concerned about playing another 60 minutes of meaningful football. Because here's the thing. When you play for the Detroit Lions, you're playing 17 games. But let's stretch this out. Let's think of a team that could be the next NFL dynasty. Because the Patriots dynasty is pretty much done. They might, if Brady comes back, they could have a run. It might happen. But the Patriots dynasty is pretty much done. If there's a team in the NFL that is primed for dynastic ability, they're going to play an extra three games or four games every year in the playoffs if they win the Super Bowl or if they get to the Super Bowl. Add the extra, the 17th game, that gets you to four or five. Now you're talking about a team that the Patriots went to, what, 9 NFC title games in the span of 12 years, something along those lines. And even if they had the bye, that means they're playing 2 extra games minimum. Now you're playing a third extra game. Multiply that over the course of 9 seasons, that's an extra 27 NFL games on a body. That's not sustainable. You can't work that way. So if you've got any thoughts on this new NFL PA CBA, it's concerning to me. I've got a lot of question marks, but if you like it, if you like the addition of the 17th game, if you like the addition of the 7th playoff team, give us a call, 610-632-0975. We're also going to have some fun today. So over the course of this weekend, I have created an NCAA-style NFL Super Bowl champions bracket. And you guys have done a tremendous job of helping me out and filling out the first two rounds. We've narrowed the field down from the top 32 ranked Super Bowl teams, according to Sporting News. We've gotten it down to the Elite Eight, And so if you haven't joined me, if you didn't join me yesterday, what we did was we took those 32 teams, put them into an NCAA-style bracket, and all we did was we're not asking if the two teams played today. Because I understand that there are different styles. I understand that there are different schemes. There's different fits. Players are bigger, faster, stronger today than they were in the 1960s. We get that the 1966 Packers probably would stand no chance against the 2019 Kansas City Chiefs on a neutral site field. I mean, none of the three of us left in the studio here were alive in 1966. Pat may have been. I think he might have been at the game. But I don't know anybody on the 66 Packers that could have covered Tyreek Hill. I just don't think it's possible. So we're not sitting here and saying the two teams are going to play. What we are comparing is the seasons, how they got to their Super Bowl championship. We are factoring in struggles, and that's probably why the 2017 Eagles, along with the fact that they are the 2017 Eagles, have won some games, because there were a ton of struggles to get to that point. So what we're doing is just comparing the seasons, comparing the teams, saying this team had X amount of Hall of Famers and a Hall of Fame coach. This team had Y amount of Hall of Famers. That's really how we're working this thing today. So here's how this thing works. When you call up, you talk the NFLPA CBA agreement, or we kind of get into another conversation that I've got coming up in a little bit. I'll give you a matchup. You have a vote. So if you call, your vote is worth 49% of the vote. Then we'll take to Twitter. The Twitter poll will be up for exactly 10 minutes to keep this thing moving. The Twitter poll will also have 49% of the vote. I know that doesn't equal 100, but there's a reason for it. If both the caller and the Twitter poll agree, that team moves on to the next round. If the caller and the Twitter poll disagree, we put it up to the deliberator, the producer of the show. You just heard his voice, Josh Ravick. The unfortunate part for the caller and the Twitter poll, if Josh gets put on the spot and is the ultimate deliberator, Josh has final say. It doesn't matter if the caller says the 2017 Eagles and the 2017 Eagles lose the poll by 75%. Josh gets final say. And that's how this thing will work. We're going to try to get this thing into at least the Final Four, but I'd love to move it into the championship if we could. So when you give us a call about the NFL new CBA agreement, which I think stinks, I think the addition of the 17th game stinks, I think the addition of the 7th playoff team stinks, I think it's a bad CBA in general. So when you give us a call to agree or disagree with me about that, we'll give you a team in the tournament or a matchup in the tournament. You get a chance to help us decide who the greatest Super Bowl team of all time is. Final thing on the table today, we're going to have a little fun. Of course, there's no live sports, so we like to kind of have a little fun, harken back to some old days, and have a little, just a little bit of a different conversation. So what I wanted to do today, I had a conversation at a gathering last night, and that conversation led to, what's your favorite jersey of all time? Yeah, that's a pretty open-ended question. What's your favorite jersey of all time? I get that. But everybody has a different answer. There are so few people that have a different answer or the same answer to what is your favorite jersey of all time that I think it allows for a lot of a fun conversation. I'll give you mine on the other side. I got to get Josh Rabix as well. You give me yours. I've got three jerseys that are probably like my gold, silver, bronze. I'll leave you with this little bit, and then we got to head to our first break. Hockey is not my number one sport. I was pretty adamant about that last week when I gave an open forum to hockey fans to have a hockey conversation. But two of my three favorite jerseys of all time are NHL jerseys. We'll discuss that and more on the other side. 610-632-0975. Josh Rabick producing and co-hosting today. I'm Tyler Zuli. We're taking you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic.
We're back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday with us. 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli and Josh Ravick. Pat Egan, despite the fact that he's been off the air for almost a half an hour now, still hanging around. So he is 100% a foxhole guy.
I just love the conversation. I don't want to go home.
Definitely a foxhole guy.
You know what's at home? My wife and kid.
Have you met them? Now that there's no sports, you've officially met them?
I have, and they seem like nice people, but I'm still skeptical.
They seem like they're okay people. So, good for you on meeting your family for the first time. I'm really proud of you. 610-632-0975. I teased right before we got to the break. One of the conversations I wanted to have today was a little bit more lighthearted, you know, thinking back on some of our favorite sports memories. And one of the things that I always really enjoyed as a kid, and I still kind of enjoy as an adult, is looking at who's got the nicest jerseys. And I really like to say one jersey doesn't make a team, because anybody can come up with one cool jersey, but if your other jersey's trash, then you don't have a nice kit. You have one cool jersey. With that being said, and like I said before the segment ended, I'm not the biggest hockey guy. I like hockey, of course. I'm a hockey fan, but it's not my top priority. With that being said, I think that hockey has some of the freshest and cleanest all-around kits when it comes to sports. Because the road white jerseys are really tough to get perfect, because they are just a plain white jersey with your logo so often. It really comes down to your home jersey and your alternate jersey. But there are two jerseys that are so incredibly crisp, both home and away in the NHL, that I have like drastically fallen in love with them. And the first one is the Chicago Blackhawks. And I say the Blackhawks black jersey is my favorite, but I don't think you can go wrong with the black jersey, the red jersey, or the white jersey when it comes to Chicago. I think all three are just incredible. The other one, and this being more so the case because I think it's classic, it's crisp, it's clean, there's not a lot to it, are both the blue and white Toronto Maple Leafs jerseys. I just think that they are so, I don't like to use the word neat, but I think they're almost neat, where it is just a really clean jersey. The blue leaf on the white jersey looks really nice. I don't know. Maybe hockey, because I get a chance to take a step back, unlike baseball where I'm like scrutinizing everything about the game. Hockey, I get a chance to take a step back and really actually look at jerseys. But those two to me are two of my three favorite jerseys of all time.
So are you like the guy in college football who likes the Alabama and the Penn State uniforms just because it's simple and clean?
It's funny you ask that. Because no, I'm not the far other end of the spectrum. I'm not the Oregon guy either, where there's 737 jersey combinations. But Penn State, like, obviously has a place in my heart because I went to Penn State. But the basicness of Penn State jerseys, if I were not a Penn State guy, I don't think I would enjoy. Like, I don't enjoy looking at the Alabama, not just the number on the helmet. It's never been for me. It's funny you ask that. So the answer to your question, as homerish as this sounds, yes for Penn State, no for Alabama. And that is totally hypocritical and homerish, but I would have to say that's my answer. I fall somewhere in between. I like a nice, concise jersey, but I also like when college football has a third jersey. So, like, for me, the one that always comes to mind is TCU. I really think that their black and purple jersey is a really nice third option. But there is always a special place for the classics. You know, the Maple Leafs, I already said the Blackhawks classic jerseys, the Red Wings are another one. I mean, you could pretty much go up and down the first six from the NHL, and they've all got great jerseys.
And in hockey, too, you've had so many teams change, like, color schemes with their logos, also with ownership changing, whether we're talking the Ducks or even the Canucks, when you think about how much they've changed since, I believe it was the Orca company consumed them, and they went to more of that Orca logo.
Yeah, the what looks to be a classic white and blue and like, the green jersey, but it's if you know the history, it's not really their classic jersey. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the NHL has a lot of fluidity in its jersey making, so I think that the teams that have been able to withstand the test of time when it comes to their jerseys, maybe they've got an extra spot for me. I mean, to be fair, the Flyers are the same way. The Flyers have had the same logo and the same, and things have changed minimally, but they've other than the 3D jersey, you know, like the Zverev jersey, I think that they've been pretty solid throughout as well.
Yeah, there was a time where that black uniform was the alternate, and that was how that was introduced towards like the late right. 90s, 2000s, end of the Lindros era and everything. And now I look back and I kind of miss the old away jersey of the Flyers, which was more orange and less white.
The third one for me, and we'll get yours in a second, Josh, the third one for me, this one might be the typical response because especially now that it's kind of circulated back in the NBA, especially this season, is the old school Vancouver Canucks, or excuse me, no, Vancouver Grizzlies, I'm sorry. The when they were the Vancouver Grizzlies jerseys. Now, Memphis has started to wear it this season a little bit more. I don't know if it's particularly that I love the jersey, I have always loved the jersey, or I think Ja Morant's immersion in the jersey looks great. It's just a very crisp number with Moran across the top. I think it's a really cool logo. But the logo itself with the bear, I thought that was probably my third one.
So there's other factors, though, that play into it that kind of buy into your emotional likeness of the jersey.
Probably a little bit. It's not just, you know, because by the time they phased that jersey out, we were still pretty young. I mean, they went to the more basic blue color scheme. We were still fairly young. When you bring a jersey like that back, to me, it's the one that stands the test of time. Because the running joke in the NBA is that Vince Carter's first jersey is now a throwback jersey with the Toronto Raptors. But it's a throwback jersey that's not from the 60s. It's a throwback jersey that stood the test of time and had enough breathing space that you can conceivably say it's a throwback jersey, but it's also still their best jersey. So it's a weird combination of the two. It's a weird combination of I like throwback jerseys, but also the one that stands the test of time.
Okay. And it seems like hockey is the biggest draw for you while you said,
yes.
Listen, hockey's not my number one sport. It's not a lot of people's number one sport for obvious reasons. But when you look at the uniforms, it seems like there's that standard clean uniform that stands out more for you in that sport.
And maybe, too, I don't know how you feel about this, but the wearability of a hockey jersey. Because here's the thing. Wearing an NBA jersey, like out on the street, especially if you're the guy that wears the NBA jersey with nothing underneath, like a hoodie or a shirt or something. Like if you're not a kid, are you really, should you really be wearing a sleeveless NBA jersey?
Right, or you have to be the redshirt senior white point guard on some mid-major that's wearing the t-shirt underneath.
I was a t-shirt underneath guy. That one is out for me. The NFL jersey has a lot of wearability as well, but when you wear the NFL jersey that's not the authentic NFL jersey, like the pressed-on numbers, and we all have pressed-on jerseys because they're significantly cheaper. But there is a distinct visual difference between the legitimate jersey and the pressed-on jersey. So that, to me, is also out. Baseball jerseys are just too hot to wear in the summer. You know, you can wear the baseball jersey to the game in April and May and then to the game in the end of September and the playoff run. But you get into June and July and August, you're wearing the t-shirt, the jersey, because it's just too hot to wear a baseball uniform at Citizens Bank Park. You're dying by the third inning.
I probably own two actual baseball uniforms and the rest of them, it's 35 jerseys.
It's the jersey, right. That's the best way to go because it's a t-shirt, it's breathable, and you're still representing the team. Now, you're not going to wear a hockey jersey in the summer, but the longevity of the hockey jersey wearability from October to here, probably April, but some of the cities in Canada up north, probably September through May. So to me right there, the hockey jersey is the superior jersey.
And how many people do you know wear the hoodie and shorts for most of winter anyways?
I mean, I'm a hoodie and shorts guy. I mean, that's my go-to look. I mean, you see me around here. How many times have you seen me in a hoodie and a pair of Nike shorts? 5 out of the 6 nights we work together?
Sounds about right.
it's the comfortable it's the comfortable look that I like to rock because I get, I guess, cold up top and warm. My legs stay warm. I don't know. Whatever it is, maybe my legs are numb. Maybe I don't have any feeling in my legs.
Three biggest muscles in your body are below your hips, so that's probably it.
All right, fair enough. You get a little bit of a an anatomy biology lesson here on 97.5 The Fanatic at 4:38 on a Sunday. So before we head to break, Josh, I'd like to get yours. Do you have a specific jersey in mind that is your favorite jersey of all time?
I have three for three different reasons.
Okay.
I got the Blue Jays uniform. This is more sentimental. My knee-high team, the 0-13-1 Blue Jays. Never won a game.
Oh, so you got stunk.
Oh, we stunk. I was the youngest kid on the team, and I was a leadoff hitter. That was just a recipe for disaster.
Were you one of the better players, or did you contribute to the stinking?
I'd like to think I contributed a little bit to the stinking. I was okay for my age, but I was very average.
Okay.
So there's sentimental value for the Blue Jays.
You're a hockey player.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's got the one they were better than at the rest. Like, I played basketball and soccer for fun. I mean, I obviously wanted to win. Getting on the court and winning was all that mattered. But I knew that out of the three sports that I played, I was the best at baseball.
Okay.
I would imagine, did you feel the same way about hockey growing up?
I thought at first I was better at baseball.
Oh,
but
really? Okay.
Yeah, so I was from a hockey cul-de-sac. So everybody, I was the worst hockey player in my cul-de-sac. Let's be very clear to that. But if you went out, it was a nice day out. We were playing hockey. So okay, you had to get a little bit better at hockey to fit in with the rest of the kids. Number two, I'm going the powder blue Chargers uniforms. Remember when they start bursting on the scene?
Okay.
Later, LaDainian Tomlinson. It just stood out, especially compared to their last uniform, which was very bleh. You could kind of see why Eli Manning didn't want to go there. That, and it was a bad culture in San Diego at the time. So the LA Chargers, the Chargers powder blues. And number one, I'm going to go with the Minnesota North Stars. And I actually own two Minnesota North Star jerseys. My favorite non-Flyer growing up was Mike Modano.
Okay, so the home green or the road white?
I have both, but the home green is my favorite of
okay,
the two.
Fair enough.
And I mean, it's for a big reason is you don't see that color of green with yellow too often as well. So I think it's with you as far as you looking at the clean jersey. I'm looking at, all right, this color scheme's very different from what I see around the rest of the league.
And that, I mean, that's understandable. That's why, I mean, when you see a... People get really excited for odd jerseys or third jerseys that change the color scheme up dramatically. Like when the Cleveland Browns came out with their new jerseys, right? The orange and brown. Everybody went, these stink. What is this? It looks like the same except that like they drew it on paint. Like Microsoft Paint, a 10-year-old did it. But when you can get that difference, I would agree with you on that. Which is another reason why, you know, I can't confidently say that I would wear a Lakers jersey, but like the Lakers purple and gold is a nice pop, a nice transition from, you know, your typical blues, your reds, your blacks, your whites. It's a nice color scheme change. 610-632-0975. So what we've got on the table today is threefold. We are discussing the NFLPA, new CBA agreement, that was just voted on today by a 51.5% vote to 48.5%. They voted to agree on that and extend the regular season by an extra game. They will also add one playoff team in each of the conferences. We're also discussing what is your favorite, doesn't have to be a throwback, could be a current jersey, but what's your favorite jersey in all of sports? We're continuing the NCAA-style Super Bowl champion bracket. We are into the Elite Eight. You give us a call, we talk one of the two things, and we get this bracket going once again with the Elite Eight starting. So 610-632-0975. Josh Rabick producing and co-hosting today. I'm Tyler Zulli. We're taking you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Some good news in a less than stellar last couple of days. Adam Schefter just tweeted out about 7 minutes ago that multiple people across the league, meaning the NFL, are now anticipating that the start of the league year will not be moved and it will start on time. He said, of course, these are still ongoing conversations and it could change, but there's a different tone from teams as if it's happening now. So I understand that the NFL season is still 5 months away. And things could happen. We don't know. I've been very transparent in the fact that we really have no idea. But this is good news to say that the league believes that it will start in the first week of September, which I think is a huge step of confidence for a lot of fans. Because there's a lot of fans that are truly just hoping to get something back at some point. Most of us are sitting here and it feels like it's been 17 weeks since we've had a professional sport or a college sport or something like that. Guys, it's been 4 days. It's very, very hard on all of us. It's going to get harder as the weeks go on. But it is great news to see that the NFL believes that by the time that their schedule will begin, they believe we'll get some normalcy back in our lives. 610-632-0975. So what we have on the docket today is the NFL PA new CBA agreement that they just signed earlier today. A lot of players were opposed. In fact, 48.5% of the players that had a chance to vote were against the CBA. It inevitably passed by 51.5%. And the big talking points for us are twofold. The big talking points are the addition of a 17th game into the regular season, as well as the addition of a 7th playoff team into each league, or each conference, I should say. That concerns me. I still am going to fight on this hill that mediocrity should not be awarded. Participation should not be awarded. I understand that it gives us an extra week of what should or could be meaningful football. But what it does is sap the competition. What it does is make us look at a team that probably does not deserve to be in the playoffs, but will be in the playoffs. There was a list that was going around Twitter when this first idea had broken, and it was part of the CBA proposal. And you looked at all the teams that were going to be the next team up, that in the years past would have been team 7 in each league. And when you look at it over the course of a 10-year span, there was like 3 teams that were playoff-worthy teams. And I don't even include the 10-6 Eagles that didn't make the playoffs the year that Mark Sanchez had to take over at quarterback. I don't think that team was very good. That was Chip Kelly's second season. It was the second year in a row that they had gone 10-6. Mark Sanchez took over for, I believe, an injured Sam Bradford. Oh, right. Yes, thank you, Josh. It was Nick Foles coming off the 27-2 season. So Nick Foles gets hurt. Mark Sanchez steps in. Inexplicably loses a game on a Saturday night, I think it was, to the Washington Redskins. And the season was over after that. 10-6 teams oftentimes can be deceiving. A 10-6 division winner is a 10-6 division winner. 10-6 wild card teams, a little bit more deceiving. You get into that 9-7 territory, and it's everything's off the rails. You get an 8-8 team? Absolutely not. Can't do it. 610-632-0975. Let's get to the phones. We're going to go to Greg in Jersey. You're up next on the Fanatic. What's up, Greg? Greg. Oh, no more Greg. All right, Greg, give us a call back if you had a bad line there. 610-632-0975. We are also, of course, discussing what Greg wanted to talk about was, what is the one or two jerseys that stand out to you all time? You know, like I said earlier, the NHL has always had a place in my heart when it comes to jerseys, despite the fact that I'm not necessarily a number one NHL guy. I love the NHL, but I've always been MLB, NFL first. Those have always been my top two. But NHL jerseys have always had a special place in my heart. So is there one particular jersey that has always stood out to you more than the rest? We're also getting into, we're going to continue our Super Bowl bracket. We are down to the Elite Eight. So when you give us a call about the NFLPA or this jersey conversation, we'll give you a matchup. You give us who you think is the better team. Not necessarily who would win in a one-on-one game, but who you think is a better team, who you think had a better season, better players, better coaching staff. And then we'll take the Twitter. You get half the vote. Twitter gets half the vote. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. We got to get this thing, determine a winner. We've got eight teams left. I'd like to get through the whole thing today if we could. 610-632-0975. Our man Greg is back on the line from Jersey. What's going on, Greg?
Hi, I just want to talk about the Jersey favorite.
Yeah, please.
It goes back before your time, but the WHA, competitively with the NHL, the Hartford Whalers had a really cool emblem there, had the W and the whale tail that went up, and the space in between made the H for the Hartford. That was pretty cool.
So, Greg,
and I can't help but think, every time I see that, I think Tiger Woods, he got a little something from that when he came up with his logo.
Greg, let me ask you something. When it comes to the Whalers jersey, were you a fan of the green or the white? Or the kind of combo blue one?
I like the white. And that's another thing I brought up with your switchboard man there. When I was going, I had season tickets for the Flyers for 10 years.
Sure.
And, I'm 55, so older. But home teams wore white back then.
Okay.
So that was different. I liked the Flyers home white. I didn't like the orange.
Sure,
they wear the orange at home. So, my Flyers jersey that I have was, I remember I bought it a Bernie Perrant jersey. He had been done for a while, but I was a goalie, so that's what I wanted.
Sure.
And
sure.
I remember when I picked it up at the store after I ordered it, it was a nice stitched jersey and everything. The lady that handed it to me said, "Here you go, number one parent jersey."
Parent,
oh,
that's
man.
Incredible. It's funny too, because I think your outside non-hockey fan would probably just assume that it was parent.
The other one that I liked a lot was the first the original Vancouver Canucks jerseys when they wore the black.
Okay.
Now, I don't remember if that was home or away because they had the V
right.
That came around the neck for Vancouver. But the away jerseys, I guess, the yellow ones, they look like pajamas. That was bad. I like the black ones, but the yellow ones were
so
bad.
Greg, we've got two questions for you. One more on the jersey, and then we'll get to the NFL bracket. How do you feel about the Carolina Hurricanes wearing the Whaler jersey? Because to me, I know that that's where they went, but to me, it's just kind of a weird, like, it almost seems to me that's not their jersey.
Well, I mean, the colors are the same, but the symbol is certainly not. I mean,
So, like, what I'm talking about, so Carolina, of course, is, that's where the Hartford Whalers relocated to. But so, like, the green jersey to me, when Carolina wears the green Whaler jersey, it just doesn't feel right to me.
No. I don't know.
All right, so let's get into this NFL bracket. We've got, we're down to the Elite Eight, so here's how this is going to work. I'll give you two teams. You pick which team you like, which team you think was a better team from top to bottom, better coaching, better talent, all that good stuff. All of these are Super Bowl champions, so you can't use that as an argument. But I will give you this matchup right here. The number one seed in this side of the bracket, the 1989 San Francisco 49ers versus the number seven seed, the 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers.
I think I'd have to go with the 49ers.
The 89 49ers, Greg, I appreciate the phone call. So what we will do is now put that up on Twitter. We've got an Elite Eight matchup between the 1989 San Francisco 49ers and the 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'll put that up on my Twitter, at Tyler Zuli. We'll get it retweeted on the station account at 975thefanatic.com. The Twitter poll will be open for 10 minutes time. And you'll have a chance to be 50% of the vote, or 49% of the vote. And we'll see what happens when we get back on the other side. We move on into the 5 o'clock hour here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabick producing and co-hosting. I'm Tyler Zuli. We're taking you up until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
First hour in the books here on 97.5 The Fanatic as we take you up until 8 o'clock here tonight on a Sunday. Thanks very much for joining myself, Tyler Zuli, and my producer and co-host today, Josh Rabick. 610-632-0975. You've got about 6 minutes left to jump in on the Elite Eight matchup number one. which is the one seed at 1989 San Francisco 49ers versus the seven seed 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers. So the Steelers so far, that seven seed, have upset the 1992 Cowboys and the 1981 San Francisco 49ers. So that Steelers team has already beaten one 49ers team. Can they beat a second? Will certainly be interesting. Our caller, Greg, started us off by taking the 49ers. Currently, the 49ers have a lead, but you've got 5 minutes left to vote on that one. You can find the poll on 97.5 The Fanatic and at Tyler Zulli. So we continue the conversation today about the new NFL CBA. Some interesting, fun, remembering conversation about which jersey was your favorite. Doesn't have to be a throwback. There can be a current jersey that you love the most, but we like talking throwbacks because that gives us a chance to kind of go down a rabbit hole of just a different conversation, different talking points. We remember games. We remember where we were when the games happened, that those jerseys were worn. So if you've got a throwback jersey, I'd love to hear it as well. 610-632-0975. We're going to go to Josh in Doylestown next. You're on the Fanatic. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey, Josh. How are you? Thanks for making the call.
Yeah, I'm loving this jersey conversation. When you know, I'm a 4-for-4 guy. I was raised in Philly, always have been. But you know, when I was a kid playing Sega Genesis or whatever, I always chose my second team by jersey color.
Okay.
Josh took one of them with the North Stars. But my other favorite hockey jersey was the old powder blue Quebec Nordiques. I love that jersey.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was a good one. As far as football goes, I always loved the dark blue and bright yellow Rams uniforms that they just went back
to. So the old ones that are now the new ones that kind of resurfaced recently.
Yeah, I hate when they wear the helmet with the white horns. I love it with the bright yellow horns. Sure. I think it looks so much better. Let me ask you this then,
Josh, because you're a fan of that jersey. What do you feel about the new logo that they just introduced recently?
I haven't even seen it yet, to be honest.
Do me a favor. When we get off the phone together, take a look at this logo, because my friend put it in a group chat that I'm in with probably like six or seven guys, and they're all pretty big sports guys. So it's not like it was like a shock. But he put the picture up, and I said, "Wow, that's bad even for the Chargers." And he goes, "Dude, it's the Rams." I was floored. It looks like a Chargers jersey. That's how much I thought it was the Chargers. So take a look at it when you get a chance when we're off the phone together.
Yeah, definitely will. Thanks for that.
Yeah, of course. So let's get you in this bracket. We'll give you matchup number two in the Elite Eight. I will give you, I'll give you this one, the other side of the bracket. We'll get another 49ers team. This is the 1984 San Francisco 49ers versus the 2004 New England Patriots.
That's a good one. I'm going to have to go 49ers. They might be the best team of all time, maybe as far as Super Bowl winners.
The 84 49ers is a great one. That is who I also picked to win this whole thing. Thank you for the call, Josh. I greatly appreciate it. We'll put that one up on Twitter as well. Listen, I don't have a say in this tournament. I'm just the conduit. I'm just the guy. I'm just the messenger. I just give you the matchups. You vote. Twitter votes. Josh votes if necessary. I don't have a vote. So if I did, my vote was going to go to the 84 49ers as the winner of this tournament. So now we'll put that one up on Twitter as well. The 84 49ers were a one seed. They were taking on the Patriots were the three seed. Yes, so the 2004 New England Patriots were the three seed. So we'll put that one up on Twitter as well. We're also going to get a check in just a minute of our last poll, because it's got to be probably close to coming to an end. So 610-632-0975. The newest poll is up on my Twitter. We'll get it up on the Fanatic Twitter page as well. Josh informs me that we have a minute left on the Elite Eight matchup number one. Now, the one-seeded San Francisco 49ers have taken over three-quarters of the vote. I don't expect that to change, but in the matter of fairness, we will wait this thing out. And while we do that, we'll go to our friend Drew in Westchester. You're up next on the Fanatic. What's up, Drew?
Hey, Tyler, how you doing?
Doing well, man. Thanks for making the call today.
Hey, man, I like that you call me your friend, man. You're my friend, too.
Of course, man. We love getting interactive with you.
Yeah, man, I love it, dude. It's all good stuff. So, about the whole NFL CBA, I'm not in favor of the extended playoff team.
Okay.
Or the season, to be honest. I think that right now they got it pretty much figured out to, if anything, it should be shortened, I think, because, I mean, these guys are killing themselves. I mean, Tom Brady, I mean, it's very rare that you see a guy last a whole 16-game season, and now you're going to throw another game at him, especially a running back. You know, it's going to take just more life off these guys' careers. And I think it messes with the whole dynamics of how they make the playoff decisions, too, because now, you know, I mean, sorry, the schedule decisions, you know, because now they got to figure out, how do you schedule that 17th game? You know, right. What do you do with that 17th game?
Does it become a neutral site game? Do you get an extra home game every other season? It's really kind of a weird dynamic, because now you have an odd number of games, and, you know, teams, if they can come to an agreement and say, okay, we're either doing it neutral site or you get an every other game, then things will be fine. The problem is going to be for the ownership groups who are going to lose out on that extra game's worth of money. You know,
that's what I'm saying.
Concessions, I mean, and parking and all that good stuff. That's tough.
And that's my point. Again, what's the whole motivation of having, you know, an extra game? You know, right. Isn't it all about money to begin with? So, yeah, right. You know, like you were just saying, you know, a team's going to lose out on that type of revenue.
So, Drew, do you have a jersey in mind that you particularly like?
I would say, I'm biased. I love the current Pittsburgh Penguin jersey. Actually, not the current one.
Oh, good for you!
Yeah, I knew Josh was going to chime in there. But I like the Vegas gold one better. I don't like the yellow and black. I like the that more of a toned-down gold color that they had for a few years there.
The more recent one, I should say, before they went back to that yellow.
Exactly.
Okay.
And as far as another real good throwback one, I love the Seattle Supersonics back in the day.
Oh, nice one. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
It's funny that maybe because they no longer exist, or they just have that place in our minds and in our hearts, there seems to be a love for jerseys of teams that don't play anymore.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Yeah. I didn't even think of it, the fact that they don't play anymore. I just was looking at some pictures because, you know, I was interested in the topic, so I was like, let me see some old jerseys. And I'm like, Supersonics, man. They had a good one back in the day.
Sure. Yeah, so let's get, Drew, let's get you into this bracket matchup. We'll give you matchup number three. We're gonna go local for this one. This is a tough one because there to me is an objective winner and then a subjective winner. So this one's matchup is the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles.
Of course.
Versus the 1993 Dallas Cowboys.
He was the daddy in that deal.
Man, that 93 Cowboys team was a monster.
It's a tough one. You are in full transparency, objective. You can be more than objective, and you're not going to get any flack for it here.
As much as I love that what the Eagles did that year, I think there was a lot of luck and a lot of heart and a lot of just everything going right for them. I think overall, though, if you play the game 10 times, you know, I think Dallas wins that game, you know, more times out of the year.
Sure.
So I got to say Dallas.
Drew, I appreciate the phone call as always. Always great to talk to you. So the 1993 Dallas Cowboys on the phones have supplanted the 2017 Eagles. By the way, I took a lot of issue to this last night, and I got torn apart by not only people that called in, but also one of our producers, Connor Thomas. I got torn apart because if I would have had a bracket, the first matchup was the 2017 Eagles versus the 1972 Miami Dolphins. The 1972 Miami Dolphins, Josh, you just gave me a dirty look, because I think you actually may agree with me on this, are the only team in football history to not lose a game in the season.
There's a reason why there's a running joke about them popping the champagne every year.
Correct.
It's because of how great the Dolphins were and how difficult, despite it being a shorter season, how difficult it is to duplicate what they did.
And that's the thing. I understand that they only had to win 12 versus 16, and the playoff, when it gets to the playoffs, they only ended up, what were they, 15-0? I think they were 15-0 through 72. I understand that that's not even the length of the regular season anymore. I get that. But here's my thought. And I have to allow Connor to speak for himself at some point. But what he said to me off the air was, and I agree with him on this, the greatest football team of all time is the 2007 New England Patriots. I just think that they absolutely annihilated teams. And what he said to me was that if the Patriots had beaten the Giants in the Super Bowl, of course they'd be on this list. And I said, yeah, of course they'd be on this list. He says to me that because they would have only beaten the Giants, because I proposed to him, I said, if they would have gone down the field and scored a touchdown and they win the game 21-17, would the New England Patriots not be the number one overall seed in this tournament because they were then 19-0? And he agreed. So I said, well, then if that's the case, what is the difference between the 72 Dolphins and the 2007 Patriots if they had won the Super Bowl? Again, it's less games, but what's the difference? I don't think there's a discernible difference. So Drew in Westchester picks the 93 Cowboys. We'll get that one up on Twitter in just a second as well. Our first Elite Eight matchup has gone final. The 1989 49ers are moving on into the Final Four. They are our first Final Four participant. We've got about 3 minutes left in the Elite Eight matchup number two. That is the 1984 San Francisco 49ers versus the 2004 New England Patriots. And while we wait on that one, we will go out to Kennett Square and talk to Robert. You're up next on the Fanatic. What's up, Robert?
Oh, boy, I got you on speaker. Is that okay?
Yeah, you're good. I can hear you for now. Yep.
I'm the Mushroom Man. I always say Robert because sometimes they won't take my call. But I wanted to say that before we talk about your favorite jersey, Brett Favre had a good year in 2007, and the Packers should have beaten the Giants. The Giants got a couple lucky bounces in the regular season to even get there to play the New England, and I think the Packers would have beaten New England. With that said, my favorite jersey is number 15 in the Ice Bowl, scoring the winning touchdown.
Bart Starr.
11 seconds left. Bart Starr.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Are you a Packers fan?
Yes, and I went to the 2007 championship game.
Okay. So with that being said, you know, with you being a Packers fan, that's fair. I think that the Packers are much like I talked about earlier, the kind of like the Maple Leafs and the Red Wings. It's a classic color combination. They've been the green and the yellow for forever. They've had the same logo forever. The classic jersey, is that what helps you stand the test of time and make that your favorite jersey, other than the fact that you're a Packers fan?
It was the best memory I had as a kid. And I like the jerseys now, but it meant a lot to me, him to score that touchdown. We sat in one position, didn't move for the whole fourth quarter, like superstitious, to see them score that touchdown.
So you were at the game?
No, I was at home.
Okay. So
my dad was a Baltimore Colts fan.
Okay.
I was sitting there ready to cry.
So
we sat in the same position for 1 hour and didn't move a muscle. Again.
So, Robert, let me ask you this. So, your dad was a Colts fan. You're a Packers fan. How'd that happen?
I don't know. One day I saw Paul Hornung, didn't know who he was. Who's that guy running on all over, Dad? That's Paul Hornung. That's the Packers. I like them.
Okay, fair enough. So, Robert, I'm going to give you the final Elite Eight matchup here, and it's kind of funny that this is just totally apropos. The final Elite Eight matchup is going to be a difficult one to objectively give you, but I hope you can give me some objectivity. The Elite Eight matchup is the 1966 Green Bay Packers versus the 1985 Chicago Bears.
Oh, man. You know, it has been said that the 66 Packers were one of the greatest teams of all time, but I saw the Bears playing, and I would have to say I think the Bears will probably win that game.
Wow. Okay, Robert, I appreciate the phone call, Robert. Thank you. What was that drop?
It's from the Bears SNL skit.
Oh, okay. Where it's the Bears versus the Little Bears, right?
No, it's the Bears like super fans, which had like Chris Farley and all them.
Got it. Okay, so I've got to put up on Twitter these next two matchups because we are officially done the Elite Eight. We're not done the Elite Eight, but we are done the voting for callers in the Elite Eight. So we've got two matchups to put up. The first one is the one seed 1993 Dallas Cowboys, who Drew in Westchester chose. And it is the 8 seed, the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles. And again, remember, I did not make these rankings. I did not make these seedings. All I did was take the top 32 teams from the from Sporting News that they ranked the Super Bowl champions 1-32, and I put them into a bracket. So don't blame me for the Eagles being an 8 seed. I think that they, I don't believe that they're a 1 or a 2 seed, but what I do believe is that they are probably closer to a 6 seed or a 5 seed than they were an 8 seed. So we've got Elite 8 matchup number 3 officially just hit Twitter. Elite 8 matchup number 4 is coming your way in a matter of seconds. And while we get to that, we're going to go to John in Willingboro. You're up next on the Fanatic. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going, sir?
Doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
All righty. I just kind of like came into this conversation late.
Sure.
So I'm just hoping and praying that the 72 undefeated Miami Dolphins are part of this Elite 8.
So the
because if they're not, it's a crime.
Here's the problem, John. The 72 Miami Dolphins didn't win a game. And the reason they didn't win a game is because based on, against my better judgment, I allowed the 2017 Eagles to be in there, and both a caller and the Twitter world picked the 2017 Eagles. The 72 Dolphins did not win a game. I think it was horrible. I think it was totally unobjective. But the rules I set out, the parameters I put together, that's how it finished.
Oh, my goodness. Like I said, I came in on the end of this conversation, so all I can say in regards to that is that they had one of the stingiest defenses in the league. They were probably the most disciplined team in the league because that year I think they probably had like the fewest penalties. They had 2 1,000-yard rushers with Mercury Morris and Larry Zonka. They had a surgeon of a quarterback with Bob Greasy, an all-world wide receiver in Paul Warfield. And I'm like, you know, how could they not be – you know, among and then they didn't lose a game.
Sure. So, listen, I think the objectivity went out the window when I foolishly allowed the 2017 Eagles to be on here. I would imagine, based on your knowledge of the 72 Dolphins, are you a Dolphins fan?
I've been a Dolphins fan since probably like fifth grade.
Okay, so are you originally from Miami, or was that just a team you picked up, or how'd that happen?
No, born and raised in Trenton, New Jersey, and we all at that time, and it's funny how people talk about, like, how can you not be an Eagles fan? You know, we didn't live in Philadelphia. We, you know, Trenton is kind of like the central kind of like point kind of like between New York and Philly. So back then when we were growing up, and this is like in the late 60s, early 70s, like I could have liked the Dolphins, which I did. A buddy of mine liked the Buffalo Bills, another guy liked the New York Jets. So we just, you know, loved the team that we just happened to follow. And for me, it was the Dolphins. And seeing those guys, you know, playing against the Minnesota Vikings, Washington Redskins for their first Super Bowl, I was like, you know, I just fell in love with them.
Okay.
And they've always kind of like been like my heart choice, but I've come of years to, you know, grow to like the Eagles, you know, just as much.
Okay, fair enough. So before I let you go, John, you said you're a Dolphins fan. That's fair. Is the Dolphins to you your favorite jersey, or do you have a different team's jersey that you like the best?
No, definitely Dolphins jersey, probably favorite, and probably my favorite number, if I can go that far,
sure,
was 42, Paul Warfield.
Okay, John, thanks so much for the phone call. I appreciate it. We unfortunately, I couldn't give John a bracket game just because the Elite Eight's not over yet. So I feel bad about that, but the Elite Eight isn't over yet, so I can't move on to the Final Four until the Elite Eight is over. But one side of the bracket is done in the Elite Eight. The matchup number 2 between the 1 seed at 1984 San Francisco 49ers and the 3 seeded 2004 New England Patriots. Caller picked the 84 49ers. Twitter, by the vote of 57.5 to 42.5, picks the 1984 49ers as well. So, just spoiler alert, the championship is going to feature a 49ers team. Because this side of the bracket is the 1984 49ers versus the 1989 49ers.
This looks like a Madden game played in Northern California right now, where both people are 49ers fans and they're too stubborn to pick another team.
Right, exactly. Do you remember back in the, I don't want to say the old days, but back like 12 or maybe 10 to 12 years ago when Madden was kind of breaking in with more technologies and things that you could do when they would add the historical teams to it. And there were certain franchises that the historical teams were just average. I mean, like compared to some of the teams in the league that season. I mean, you think about some of the historical teams of the NFL when it comes to franchises that haven't had a ton of success. They weren't all that great. And then you would look at a team like the 49ers, and they'd have 72 historical teams because every team from 1940 on's been good. I always used to think that was so funny. You'd be like 81 49ers, 82 49ers, 84 49ers.
And it was an unreal transition between basically all-time great Hall of Fame quarterbacks, at least from Montana to Young, that we obviously later saw with like a Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, but that was kind of the precedent set at the time. You really didn't see that any time before then.
Yeah, it was weird. It was very weird to, you know, because I don't know about you, I didn't play a whole lot of online games when I was like when Madden 04 and 05 were coming out, so I wasn't much of an online guy at that point.
I was ranked number 300 in the world at Madden 2004 with the Mike Vick cover.
Were you really?
Yes.
That's pretty, I mean, you think about that, 300 in the world is pretty good.
Yeah, it was. I think at that time it was like over 1 million players. That's when you used to have the adapter on the back of the PlayStation 2.
That's pretty impressive. How old were you?
I would have been around 14 or 15. So this was pre-working, this was in school, not having to pay bills.
That's what you did. You come home from school and you play some Madden.
And you find little cheats to the game where you maybe once the game starts, you quick pause it. You move Randy Moss over to tight end and you get some safety linebacker coverage quick. So you get a cheap touchdown over the top.
14-year-old Josh was ahead of the game. 610-632-0975. By the way, Josh, you're probably going to be needed for matchup number 3. And the funny thing is, too, so we have 222 votes on matchup number 3. And all of the comments, one of them from our guy Connor, who we were just having the conversation about earlier today, says objectivity reigns again. Of course it does not. Patrick Durning on Twitter says, I think it's safe to say that we may have voted with our hearts here. And then Steve Martin says, LOL at the total, we're such homers. You are homers. Because objectively speaking, the 93 Cowboys were a better team than the 2017 Eagles. I don't have an issue with you being homers when it comes to a barroom conversation, but we're trying to do research here. This is real hard-hitting stuff. This is what we've got to talk about for the next 2.5 hours and for the foreseeable future. I need you guys to be a little bit more objective here. So, Josh, we're probably going to need you here for this vote when we come back.
During the break, it's going to be a battle between my head and my heart, whether I want to play to what you're talking about whether I want to be a man of the people.
I need your head to win this game. I can't have your heart. And here's the thing. If you objectively think the 2017 Eagles are a better team than the 93 Cowboys, like if you can put that on paper and say that for a fact, then pick the 2017 Eagles because I don't get a vote. But if you objectively say the 2017 Eagles were worse than the 93 Cowboys, don't pick the Eagles. Leonard on Twitter says, clearly Eagles fans are incapable of being unbiased. It's true. We're pretty hard-headed. We're pretty stubborn. 610-632-0975. Josh Rabick and Tyler Zuli. We're taking you until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Well, let's start the insanity.
Yeah, we're starting the insanity. You know why? Because people can't be objective around here. I don't get it. Listen, we're all Eagles fans. We are. 2017 was fun. It was a lot of fun. I still talk about it like it was 3 days ago. And I was closing in on 3 years ago. I was closing in on, it's a little bit over 2 years. We're on year number 3. But the 1993 Cowboys are one of the objectively greatest teams of all time. I mean, are they not? Am I just being like a jerk?
Okay, are you asking me if I think they're one of the greatest teams of all time?
Or if you're a jerk?
You're not a jerk.
Okay.
Because
now I'm asking you, are they one of the greatest teams of all time?
They are, and that's why they defeat the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles. And here's another thing. They won multiple Super Bowls based off of the core of that team. That's what defines greatness. When you look across other sports, you look at the team that won the first championship before they continued to win multiple championships, and you say that was a byproduct of that first championship win. And you look at the Cowboys there, and that was it.
So you are officially because you're the tiebreaker. The Eagles win by almost 70% of the vote.
The Eagles were on borrowed time. It was a great time. We have all these awesome memories. I love you, Philadelphia Eagles, but I'm sorry. Your time is up.
Okay. So
the clock struck midnight on Cinderella.
Cinderella story is officially over. The 1993 Cowboys are moving on into the Elite. Not the Elite Eight, the Final Four. By the way, I got to tell you something. I just got a text from my lovely, wonderful fiance. You know what she said to me? All it says is you're a jerk. So she's listening, and now I'm a jerk. So I'm a jerk to you. Clearly I'm a jerk to her. I must not be that good of a person.
Do you have any idea why?
Probably because I asked if I'm a jerk.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I opened the floodgates.
That is true.
I gave her an inch, and she took it a mile.
Yeah, that was a bad move by you.
And now I'm a jerk. 610-632-0975. By the way, the final Elite Eight matchup has officially gone final. The one-seeded 1985 Chicago Bears beat the two-seed 1966 Green Bay Packers almost 89-11. And our resident Packers fan even took the 85 Bears. So the 85 Bears move on into the Final Four. And the Final Four is officially set. On the left side of the bracket is the 1993 Dallas Cowboys taking on the 1985 Chicago Bears. On the right side of the bracket, a pair of San Francisco teams, the 84 San Francisco 49ers versus the 89 San Francisco 49ers.
Now, you obviously don't have a vote in this, so I can ask you, which one of these four teams do you think is the favorite if you had to predict right now?
Is the favorite of the four left?
Yep.
Now, are you asking me is the favorite among the people or who I would pick to win?
Who you would pick to win?
I would pick the 84 49ers.
Okay.
I think, based on how I know the voters and I know the people, I would not be shocked if the 85 Bears win this whole thing. The 84 Niners, to me, were the most complete team. And we actually we got a tweet not too long ago that said, that 49ers team could be argued as the greatest team in NFL history, from Anthony Adams. I agree. I think they might be. I truly think that might be the greatest team in the history of the game. Got a tweet. He followed up and said, "By the way, the 1966 Packers team was beginning to age. They peaked in 62. If I'm matching up based on singular seasons, I'm going 85 Bears. So there you go. We get another reason as to why the Bears were picked. So we are now officially into the Final Four. We're also talking the NFL-PA-CBA agreement that was agreed upon today. Less players than what I think the NFL-PA would have liked agreed on it. It passed, and that's, I think, all that matters to the league. So we're not going to get a lockout, and we've got a CBA through 2030. But far less players on it than I thought agreed on it. And quite honestly, I don't know how the players feel about this. You can take to Twitter. Half the players love it. Half the players hate it. Former players, I think a lot of former players are very disappointed. Because former players went through it in 2011. And like Jeff Schwartz said, and I think probably a lot of other people have said, they feel like they failed themselves in 2011. And they don't want the players to walk down the same avenue in 2020 and have to wait until 2030 to correct whatever wrongdoings they've made. You know, we read the tweet from Jeff Schwartz. We'll read it again in a little bit. And he's pretty adamant against it. Not against the deal, but was pretty adamant on getting the deal done because players seem to fold under the lights. Eric Ebron tweeted about that how he hates it. Other players have tweeted that they think it's a good deal. I'm interested to see what people think. And, of course, we're having the conversation on what is your favorite jersey of all time? Could be any league, any sport. We've really kind of kept it to the four major sports. But listen, if you really like Manchester City's powder blue jerseys, I think they're a really nice jersey. They're not my favorite, but I think they're a really nice jersey. If you really like an EPL jersey, Bundesliga, Australian rules football, cricket. Let's hear it. I like the obscurity. I really do. 610-632-0975. We'll go to Chris and Williams down next up on the Fanatic. What's up, Chris?
You know, Tyler, I got to call a violation, man. Where's Anthony Gargano when you need him, man?
That's why? What did I do?
To pick any Cowboys team over your Eagles team. I'm sorry.
They're a better football team.
Man. And we hated those teams adamantly. Like, bro, the fact that the 93 Cowboys are even in the discussion over the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles. Yes, I'm a homer, but you know what? So be it. It was the first title we've won ever, Tyler. How many titles have them Cowgirls won? Please.
And
they're a team that's going into the tank regardless. I'm sorry, but I don't care if they got Dak Prescott. I don't even care if they bring Amari Cooper back. As long as Jerry Jones, is at the top of the head, it's not going to go anywhere. I'm sorry. Like, the Cowboys are in purgatory as far as I'm concerned. Until he sells the team, that team will be in purgatory and never win a championship.
It's funny you say that because I believe that now. I believe that heading into 2020, they are in a bad spot. I thought in 2019 they were a good football team. Heading into the season, I thought they and the Eagles were pretty comparable. I thought both teams had a lot of talent. Where the Eagles lacked talent, the Cowboys had talent, and vice versa. I would lean more towards agreeing with you now because the problem being is the one thing that the CBA has helped the Eagles out in, I think more so than anything, is that the Cowboys can now not franchise Dak and transition Amari Cooper. So they're going to have to make a decision on one or the other, and the other one's getting the big payday. So
Let me throw a third. If Zeke's not on the team, are we even talking about the Cowboys as being a relevant challenger for the NFC East? Like, I don't think we are. Like, I think Zeke Elliott, even though he's a little bit of a baby and other B words, but you know, I wish we would have gotten a chance to Zeke or Saquon because I think they beat us equally every time we play against them. But I'm not worried about either one of those teams, let alone the Washington Redskins. I still think. In a certain respect, I know that the relationship between us and Alshon is kind of tarnished, but if there's any way I salvage that, I got to do it because at the depth chart, Alshon still has to be number one. I mean, come on. I don't care who you bring in here. I don't care. Greg Ward showed you anything last year. Alshon Jeffery is still number one in the pecking order.
If you are drafting a receiver in the first round, especially if you have any interest in moving up to draft a receiver in the first round, to me, they automatically become your top receiver. And especially,
not around Alshon.
I listen, and I don't think Alshon is on the team this year. But if he is, I think slotting him into the number two role actually may benefit the Eagles. Chris, before we let you go, we're into the final four now. I know that you don't want to pick the Cowboys, so I'm going to go on the other side of the bracket.
89.
So you're going 89 over 84.
Absolutely, because Jerry Rice was on that team.
All right, so
Steve Montana was on that team.
Chris, appreciate the phone call as always. So Chris takes the 89 San Francisco 49ers over the 1984 San Francisco 49ers. I'm curious because I don't know the answer off the top of my head. Was Jerry Rice not on the 84 team? Because I would
no, he wasn't. So that was when Dwight Clark was actually the number one receiver.
Fair.
For
all right, that's fair. Still, even without Jerry Rice, I think the 84 team is a better team. But Chris gets 49% of the vote. He says that he's taking the 1989 San Francisco 49ers over the 1984 San Francisco 49ers. So we will put it to a poll on Twitter now as we speak. We'll put that one up. You'll get a chance to find it at my Twitter handle at Tyler Zulli. You can also find it on the Fanatics Twitter account in the matter of about 30 seconds. At 975thefanatic.com, you'll have a chance to vote to see which 49ers team goes to the championship between the 1984 49ers and the 1989 49ers. It's funny, Chris made a mention that the Cowboys are in some type of sports purgatory. And like I said, I tend to agree with him here. Is it insane to me to believe that the Eagles' biggest threat heading into 2020 could be the New York Giants, despite the fact that they won, what, four games last season?
If you believe in Daniel Jones, I think that's the only thing that would be holding you back.
I mean, everything that Daniel Jones showed me in his rookie year was what I had kind of hoped to see from Daniel Jones. We saw a lot of rookie mistakes early. He had the unfortunate dilemma of his first start, or maybe his second start, was on the road in Foxborough. That's a really tough place to get things going, especially the way that Patriots defense played during the regular season last year. I think Daniel Jones has proven a lot of people wrong already just by what he did in his rookie season. I don't expect him to make the Carson Wentz-esque step from year one to year two, but I do expect him to take a step forward. And if he takes a step forward and Saquon gets back to being healthy and they hit on a couple of draft picks, because they have, what, the fourth pick in the draft, right? The fourth pick in the NFL draft. They have the luxury of not needing a quarterback in a draft that where the number one pick is almost assuredly going to be a quarterback in Joe Burrow. The number two pick could be traded for, because the Redskins don't necessarily need a quarterback. They could pull a Cardinals and take one, but they don't necessarily need a quarterback. Could be traded for between the Detroit Lions. Could be the Miami Dolphins trade up to get one. Wouldn't be shocked if the Chargers move all the way up if they've got a guy in mind they like. But between pick one with the Bengals, pick three with the Lions, they might need a quarterback. Pick four, Giants don't need one. If three quarterbacks go in the first three picks, for whatever crazy reason, I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the Giants' dream, is three quarterbacks going in the first three picks. But even if two go, let's say it's two and Chase Young, the Giants are going to have their pick of any offensive tackle they want. They're going to have their pick of every other defensive player that they want, whether it be Isaiah Simmons, Jeffrey Okuda, you name it. They're going to have their pick of the lot if two quarterbacks go in the first three picks. 610-632-0975. So on the table is the NFL CBA, the new agreement that added a 17th game to the regular season. It also added one playoff team to each side of the playoff bracket, and that means there's only going to be one bye team for the rest of the way. That's something we've not discussed. So I want to get into that a little bit on the other side, is now that it's only one bye team. We're also talking about your favorite jersey of all time, and we are coming to the close of this Super Bowl champion NCAA-style bracket as we have our first vote. Chris in Williamstown takes the 89 San Francisco 49ers over the 84 San Francisco 49ers. So we'll get the results on the other side of the Twitter poll as well.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Josh Rabick and Tyler Zuli taking you until 8 o'clock. Pat Egan's still here. He's doing Pat Egan stuff. He's just kind of hanging around. In the 6 o'clock hour, because of the fact that we have the only two guys that I would trust with a MMA conversation within this building between Pat and Josh, I kind of want to touch on something that Pat was bringing up to me during the break. And we will do that more in the 6 o'clock hour, because I think that the UFC specifically has a golden opportunity here. And so we'll discuss that a little bit in the 6 o'clock hour. 610-632-0975. We are here until 8 o'clock on The Fanatic. The one thing that I mentioned right before the break was part of the CBA, of course, we discussed was the extra 17th game and the addition of the 7th playoff team. The fallout of the additional 7th playoff team means that there is now only going to be one bye in each conference. And I had this argument with Andrew Salchunas a few weeks back when he was filling in for Anthony Gargano on the Midday Show. I was filling in for Andrew producing, so we went back and forth. And Andrew, as you all know, is kind of our get-off-my-lawn type of guy. He's like our young, I should rephrase that. He's our young get off my lawn type of guy. He's like our resident young boomer. But in that on that particular day, I think Andrew and I swapped roles. Because Andrew was all about the addition of the seventh team. He was all about the addition of the – or the loss of the second bye because he felt that it added to competition. He felt that it meant that only the best team would get a chance to get that additional week off. I, on the other hand, think that the second bye was a necessity because there are oftentimes when you have multiple 13-3 teams like we had this season – I think that the 13-3 team deserves a bye. In fact, we had a 13-3 team that had to play in the first round of the playoffs this year in the wild card game and lost the home game to the Minnesota Vikings. That was the New Orleans Saints. But if you get two teams, especially when there's only two teams that, let's say one's 13-3 and the other is, or one's 14-2 and the other one's 13-3, I think winning 13 of your 16 games is good enough to get you a bye. Even if you're not the top seed in your conference. Now, I know I sound hypocritical because I talk about only the best survive and we're playing participation trophies and all that good stuff by adding a seventh team. But that is the addition of a seventh team that won 9 of 16 games or maybe 10 of 16 games. We're talking about a team that had to go on the road 8 times in a year and at minimum win 5 of them. Because if you're a 13-0 team or a 13-3 team, and even if you win all 8 of your home games, at minimum, you won 5 of your 8 road games. To me, that means something. So I think the loss of the wild card, or the loss of the bye, excuse me, for the second place team and the second place team having to play in the wild card round is kind of weird. I've just grown accustomed to the top 2 seeds getting a bye and the 1 and 2 seeds having such a distinct advantage in getting to the NFC and AFC title games that, to me, I don't know if I want to get rid of it. So I feel like I am truly the guy that hates fun. I'm the guy that hates change in this particular situation. But all 3 of the phases that we would discuss as a part of sports radio, I don't like. So I don't like the addition of the 17th game. I don't like the addition of the 7th playoff team. And with the addition of the 7th playoff game, I don't like the loss of the second seed getting a bye. Josh, what are your thoughts on the number 2 seed now having to play in the wild card weekend?
It's funny you say that. Who was the Super Bowl champions? The Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. What were they?
The 2 seed.
They were the 2 seed, and they actually gained that 2 seed late in the season over the New England Patriots, who then also lost week 1 during the wild card weekend, just like the Saints did as well. I think when you play that well and you're talking about the number of road games you have to win, you earn that spot. And here's another facet that goes into that. Fantasy football playoffs, whether you like it or not and how deep it goes into it, it's a major factor. And with these better teams, you want them playing relevant games later on, maybe not week 17, but week 16 still. You right. want them to be playing relevant games because let's face it, the Ravens, they ran away with the AFC early on.
So your thought process is that the addition, the loss of the 2 seed is going to make for less competition for later down the stretch.
Correct.
Okay. So here's the only thing that the 1 seed allows when it comes to the bye is that you've got now 7 teams. Well, I mean, obviously all 16 teams, but 7 teams fighting for 1 bye. I don't disrespect that. I just agree with you on your thought process where the 2 seed is often the more fought after, the more sought after of the byes because oftentimes, right, the Ravens run away with the conference. In 2017, nobody was catching the Eagles. They were on a tear and they were going to be the 1 seed.
And every other year, there's that one team that starts off like 7-0, 8-0, and the team that essentially the Dolphins are watching on whether they can pop their champagne bottles or not.
Right.
And that's the team that runs away and they get 2 games, 3 games on the other seeds.
And so let me ask you this, because last year was a little bit of a different atmosphere because there were 3 13-win teams in the NFC. With that being said, I looked at the NFC last year, and even with 3 13-win teams, I don't know about you, I can't speak for you and I can't speak for everybody out there right now. But to me, the 1 seed, which was the Green Bay Packers, right? No, the 49ers. And the two seed, which were the Green Bay Packers, despite the fact that they were both 13-3, were incredibly distinguishable. I thought the 49ers were significantly better than the Green Bay Packers. When it comes to the two seed, however, I don't know if the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints were that much distinguishable. So that, to me, is where that two seed, the second bye, is of the most importance. Because, again, the one seed is often, we knew the Ravens were the best team in the AFC. In the regular season, of course. Did we know the Chiefs were the second best team in the AFC?
I'd say maybe not, because for a while before the Chiefs' defense, their secondary started to heat up, that people weren't big fans of the Chiefs, and I think early on people were bigger fans of the Pats.
Yeah, I wasn't buying the Chiefs, and as much as I loved the Chiefs' offense, I equally loved the Patriots' defense. So with me equally loving the Patriots' defense, I always am a big believer when all things are created equal, defense travels. Which is why, to me, I thought the Patriots were the superior team, despite the evident issues that were, you know, the Tom Brady regressing, Tom Brady regressing, the Patriots regressing on offense. There was no real threat. I thought the Patriots' defense was better than the Chiefs' offense. Now, that didn't happen, of course, and the Chiefs go on to win the Super Bowl. But it's why that the two seed is just as equally important as the one seed is, until you have to go on the road and play the one seed in the title game. 610-632-0975. We're halfway home here on our four-hour show today. Coming up on the other side, we will continue this CBA conversation. Dave in Center City, hold tight. We will get to you first. You'll be the first one up. And then it can be you, 610-632-0975. We'll continue the conversation on the CBA and the NFLPA. We will also continue the conversation on what is your favorite throwback jersey? Because that's kind of what it's become. I haven't had anybody tell me that their favorite jersey is a current rendition of a jersey, except for myself, who I said I love the Toronto Maple Leafs blue jersey. So we'll talk about your favorite throwback jersey, and of course we are wrapping up things here on the Super Bowl champion NCAA style bracket. I'll give you the winner of the first of the two final four games on the other side. It was a pair of one seeds matching up and a pair of San Francisco 49ers teams matching up. And I do want to talk a little bit about the UFC, because we've got two UFC guys still here in the building, and they've got more knowledge than me, so I'd like to pick their brains a little bit. 610-632-0975. We're here until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Hours left here, at least with myself here on 97.5 The Fanatic and Josh Rabick. Pat Egan here as well. We're hanging out until 8 o'clock. I did have the UFC conversation that I wanted to have, because I think that this is a really, really good opportunity for the UFC, as long as they can kind of hang tight to make a legitimate global impact over the next few weeks. So we'll get into that in just a little bit, but first we're going to go to Dave in Center City. He wants to talk about the NFL CBA. What's up, Dave?
Hey, TMZ, Tyler Michael Zoli. How are you,
bud? Yeah, that would be great if my middle name was Michael, but unfortunately okay. It is not.
Young man, give me some clarification here. Sure. In regards to the CBA agreement. Are we going to 17 or 18 games, and if so, when?
17 games, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe 17 games as early as 2021.
Okay.
I think. It may be 2020, but I know before at least by 2021.
Okay. And are we expanding to 14 or 16 playoff?
It will be teams. 14 teams. Seven in each conference, one bye.
Okay. Let's deal with the here and now with NFC football. Tyler, you know better than anyone. I've been preaching to the A team for over 2 years that the NFC is watered down and it is getting worse. Okay, the elite are getting worse. As of now, the Philadelphia Eagles football team that has been held together by scotch tape, by Doug Peterson, is the second best team in the NFC right now. The Tennessee Titans are better than any team in the NFC right now. Am I off base? Am I a homer? Or do I have validity here,
so,
sir?
So I've got to ask you this. So you say the NFC is watered down. I would tend to agree. But on the same token, I think that the Eagles are also a worse team than they were, you know, 24 months ago when the NFC was better. So I think that they've all kind of gone down together.
All right. Now, I will let me have the floor, Assemblyman, sure, in regards to the Eagles. They're going to fix. This offensive line is going to be fixed. There's a kid out of Baylor they're going to draft. They're going to bring in Williams. They're going to fix this. Carson's going to take 16 sacks all year. This habitual problem of giving up plays of 40 yards or more will come to an end quickly because nobody was even that putrid as the Eagles were. They're going to bring in defensive backs. You got the 1-2 punch, Tyler, of Dougie Pete and Carson. Where do you see problems down the road?
I see problems down the road in the fact that I think that there are a lot of holes that need to be fixed before that thing's kind of right. I think that you're right. Doug Peterson is a great coach. Carson Wentz is a great quarterback. I think Miles Sanders is your feature back down the line. My concern being is the fact that Jason Kelce worries about retiring every year. The offensive line itself is not getting much younger. And if Andre Dillard is not the answer, I've got concerns there. The linebacking core, I think, is non-existent. I know you only need two nowadays, but the linebacking core, to me, is non-existent. And the fact that they're going to need two safeties over the next probably 2 or 3 years is also a concern.
Listen, my brother, I love you. You take care of yourself.
All right, Dave, real quick, before we let you go, do you want to give us a matchup real quick?
A matchup?
Yeah, so
we're doing a fix. Yes.
Yeah, all right, so we've got Final Four matchup number two. You're going to decide which of these teams goes to the finals. Is it the 1993 Dallas Cowboys or the 1985 Chicago Bears?
Oh, my God. You know what team I'm going to take.
Yeah, I kind of figured you would, Dave. Thanks so much for the phone call. So Dave takes the 85 Bears. That poll is officially up on my Twitter account. We'll get it up on the station account as well. By the way, real quick, before we check in on that 85 Bears poll, the first team to go to the finals is the 1989 San Francisco 49ers. They defeat the 1984 San Francisco 49ers. I thought the 84 Niners were a better team, even without Jerry Rice. But the caller says 89. That was Chris in Williamstown. The Twitter says exactly 2/3 of the vote say the 89 49ers as well. So the 89 49ers will be going into the championship. Who they play is yet to be determined. It would be either the 1985 Bears or the 1993 Dallas Cowboys. So I want to touch on what Dave asked, or what Dave talked about for just a little bit, and then I want to get into this UFC conversation for a moment. What Dave said to me was that he thinks that the NFC is watered down. I agree. But I also believe that I don't truly believe that the Eagles are, you know, a cream of the crop type football team right now. I don't believe that they're the best team in the NFC. I believe that title now belongs to the San Francisco 49ers. I don't know how easy it will be to fix this thing. I think I've been pretty adamant. I've been on record. I've done shows with you, Josh. I've done shows with you, Pat, where I think there's a lot of holes on this Eagles team. I think that, like I mentioned, I think that you need one safety for sure. You're probably going to need two within the next couple of years. You need one corner for sure. You probably also need to draft a corner. Offensive line is a concern because I don't know how much longer Jason Kelce's going to play for. I don't know how much longer the team trust Isaac Seumalo at left guard. I don't know how much longer Brandon Brooks will play for. I think Brandon Brooks is a top flight right guard. But with two injuries over the course of the last 2 years, I don't know what's inside his head. I don't know what he's thinking. They may need three linemen in the next 5 years. I don't know how to fix the wide receiver position. I don't. They're at a crossroads. They either blow the whole thing up and release Alshon Jeffrey and this is DeSean Jackson's last season with the Eagles, and draft a first-round receiver, and probably draft a third-round receiver, and probably draft a fifth-round receiver, or they try to make a splash in free agency. And by a splash, I mean a guy like Amari Cooper, something along those lines. I don't know if they go down that road, but I think that this Eagles team has a lot of holes. A lot of holes to fill. Am I that far off base?
No, and the most difficult thing is every year for the past 4 years or so, it seems like, all right, here's two holes you have to fill in. And now this year, it's so much more glaring, like you talked about, cornerback position, potentially safety position. People are going to mention D-line, O-line, and then wide receiver. When you had somebody like Robbie Anderson, who probably would have been a lot more of a team-friendly, like a deal, than a DeSean Jackson, another aging deep threat. Now you just find yourself in another situation where you have multiple wide receivers after the age of 30 that are going to be not playing the best football of their career.
The draft is going to be of utmost importance because you not only have to get cheap talent, but you've got to get the right talent that you can build around Carson Wentz and help him continue his career. He is a veteran. He's going to be a veteran on this team soon because of the turnover that's probably going to happen. I think back to 12 months ago, 1 year ago, to this point in 2019. And we asked what we thought the Eagles' biggest need was. My answer was defensive back. Certain people said they should grab another wide receiver. They need a speed threat. They went out and got DeSean Jackson. They addressed that. Some people said left tackle because Andre Dillard had not been drafted yet. But for the most part, and again, we're using the term objectivity. That's kind of been the theme of the show. Objectively speaking, we all looked at this team and said they are pretty darn close to getting back to the Super Bowl. The quarterback's in place. He's healthy finally. They've got him. If they get him a weapon, Alshon Jeffrey still is going to be a decent receiver. Can they get a running back? They did so by drafting Miles Sanders, but they hadn't, again, had the draft yet. We all thought that this was pretty close. 12 months ago, we thought that they could be a Super Bowl team. I took them to go back to the Super Bowl this past season. I know a lot of people did. I can't sit here and say on March 15th, 2020, how far are the Eagles going to go in the 2020 NFL season? I think they're a playoff team, especially if they draft well. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team.
And it's almost like the Packers in 2016 where you had confidence because Carson Wentz is your starting quarterback, just
right.
Like Aaron Rodgers.
Carson Wentz is Aaron Rodgers.
Right. But at the same time, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers ran into the Falcons with Shanahan. You have, you know, Coleman, Freeman, all the running backs, the wide receivers right there. And you just realized he was outmanned. There was no way he was going to overcome that. And despite the Eagles winning the division, you looked around the rest of the NFC and you said, you know what? I think Carson's outgunned right now.
Right. And that's the problem is Carson Wentz single-handedly won them a division. I mean, they played defensively. They played well down the stretch in the final four games, you know, I mean, and they were not playing top flight competition, but they were winning NFC East games. You know, they won four straight NFC East games to get into the playoffs. So they weren't playing top flight competition, but what they were doing was winning games that had to be won on the strength of Carson Wentz. You can't rely on the strength of Carson Wentz for 10 years. You made the perfect example was Aaron Rodgers. They won a Super Bowl, and then they went, yep, okay, we're good. We're going to draft otherwise. We're going to draft, you know, in different positions, but we are not going to truly help this guy out. We're not going to spend any money in free agency. I mean, how long did the Packers never spend money? For 8 years almost? And listen, they're still a good team. They won 13 games last year, but they won 13 games last year for the first time in forever on the strength of a defense and the strength of a running game. Aaron Jones might have been the breakout star of the year. And Aaron Rodgers played well, but all of these things helped. I can't sit here and go 4 years from now, are they going to finally help Carson Wentz, you know, on the downturn of his career? I can't wait that long. 610-632-0975. I talked about this last night with Connor Thomas. We're so spoiled in Philly because we've had so many good teams. And then we get a Super Bowl appearance from our team on top of that, a Super Bowl victory from our team on top of that. And we get even more spoiled. Oh, they got to win another one. They got to win two more. Carson Wentz got to win three. Carson Wentz going to be the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, these are half-hearted jokes, but we've heard them throughout the city. We've heard they're going to win three Super Bowls over the course of Carson Wentz's tenure.
Yeah, and if you were going to call in once Carson Wentz went down with the torn ACL and say, hey, Nick Foles without a starting left tackle, without a starting middle linebacker, they're going to go on this magical run and win a Super Bowl based off of pretty much nothing. Yeah, you were crazy. So if you're going to come back and you're going to say the same exact thing here, yeah, you are pretty much the same train of thought.
Right. Yeah, it's a weird time to be an Eagles fan because I think this team is at a true crossroads. 610-632-0975. If you've got some conversation to have about the Eagles, we are, of course, happy to have that conversation as well. I do want to shift gears just a little bit because, like I said, I've got two really knowledgeable UFC guys here, and I don't have that knowledge, so I'm going to defer to you guys a lot. Josh, of course, producing the show, is a UFC guy. Pat Egan, who was on prior to myself, is still here doing some video editing and audio editing. So if you've got a minute, I'll ask you as well. The UFC has a chance here, guys, to open up to a global scale. It is obviously blossomed in the last, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but has blossomed in the last 15 years. But what it has a chance to do now, because it is one of the few sports left remaining that is not like totally niche, that's not darts, that's not Argentinian soccer. It is widely accepted in the United States. It's got a chance to me to make a booming impact and help itself for years to come. Am I off base here to say that's the case?
No, I thought the same thing a couple days ago when I was with Torty, that in the short term they're gonna end up losing money because of the ticket gate, but in the long term, being the only game in town is going to really help them grab some eyeballs because of the fact that people will be clamoring to just watch anything sports related. And you're looking at the impact immediately, and I actually tweeted this out on my Twitter account, but Dana should have been on the phone immediately with ESPN saying that ESPN Plus card has to go to ESPN. And of course they're going to say, yeah, because what else are they going
to... They've got nothing else to watch.
I mean, all of a sudden they're throwing Stephen A. Smith out there who's become a coronavirus expert because they throw him on everything to become an expert about everything.
You almost start to feel bad for him because
I don't.
He is spread so thin.
No, I don't. I don't feel bad for him because when he talks out of his ass and he gets called on it, he doesn't actually say, you know what, you're right, I didn't know. He doubles down on his stupidity.
Okay,
and that's
enough.
Why I don't feel bad on him. Hence him calling UFC fights. So, looking at the landscape of it, they switched the card to from ESPN Plus to ESPN. It was the only live sport on yesterday. And you had Connor, who was producing my show earlier, said, yeah, I bet on it.
And he doesn't have he knows a little bit
but
I mean, I'm not comfortable betting on it. But when you throw it into the mainstream like that, it allows for people to put some extra cash down that they may not, because I don't know how you guys feel about it. And you guys are the outlier because you guys are actual fans of the sport. You go out of your way to watch the UFC every time it's on. I myself look at the UFC and I go, I'm not going to pay for a pay-per-view because I'm not invested enough. If people want to get together and pay for it, you know, if I pay $5 and a bunch of my friends get together and we watch it, then I'm cool. If I'm at a bar and it's on, I'll watch it. But the one thing for me that's a determining factor is you put that on ESPN on a channel that not only do I have free access to because the cable bill gets paid, but I also know exactly what channel it is. I'm going to go out of my way to watch it because it's something for us to, it's a combative sport. It's something for us to compete with, enjoy, bet on. They've got this perfect opportunity.
And here's the other thing too. The UFC, MMA is not as reliant on the crowd as some other sports are. Imagine playing basketball without the crowd. Imagine Duke playing without the Cameron crazies.
Right.
Pat's a big fan of the Contender Series. He's locked into the Contender Series. It's a lot of family members and required personnel there. You can hear the thuds of somebody beating off someone's face.
Yeah, it's literally 45 people there, maybe, if that. And that's where they were going to have the fights when they tried to move them until the Nevada State Athletic Commission said no. But, yeah, that arena is very small and intimate. And you kind of saw it yesterday. It was weird, man. Seeing when you watch one of these UFC cards, the first couple fights they come out, there's a smattering of people there.
Sure.
They're the hardcores who showed up early.
They're you guys.
Yeah, sadly. But...
Well, it's not sadly. It's just a sport you guys enjoy. But that wouldn't be me. Like, I'll put it to you this way. I'll put it into a way that I can compare it to. I'm the kind of guy that if I go to a concert, especially if I've paid to see the concert, I'm going to watch every single band. Even if I have no idea who, you know, keyboard wallflowers are. You know, I totally made that up, but...
No, they sound good.
Probably a good band.
I'll check them out.
I would go watch their set because I paid for the concert ticket, and I'm not going to miss the live music. You guys are the same way with the UFC, where I would imagine if you guys went to the fight, you're watching every one. You're not sitting around in the concessions or at the bar beforehand. I would imagine you guys are probably going to watch every fight.
We did it at UFC Fight Night Philadelphia. We were locked in pretty early on with the early prelims. And one of the things that helps, too, compared to when you just casually watch, the casual fan knows who Conor McGregor is.
Right.
They knew who Brock Lesnar was when he was wrestling and made the transition on over. But the problem is a lot of fans don't get to travel on the journey. So when you get to see him on ESPN and they get to see this young up-and-coming fighter like a Sean O'Malley, and they get to watch him knock somebody out in the first round, well, all of a sudden I'm like, well, that guy's pretty cool. He sounds cool. He looks cool. I want to follow him. And now as he keeps compiling up wins, you feel like you're going with him on this journey. Imagine if you found Conor McGregor before he was Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And how much more that would mean to you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way about one of the guys who holds a belt, Israel Adesanya. I watched every one of his fights except his first ever fight I missed. Other than that, I've been on the Israel Adesanya hype train, and now he's a champion. He's one of the most exciting fighters to watch. Sans the last fight, which was terrible. But yeah, I've often been asked, how do I get into the sport? And I was saying earlier on my show, the way to get into it is to get into the bad blood, to get into the background of why these two are fighting. Is it just simply guy A, guy B, they're the best fighters, that's it? A lot of times that's not it at all. A lot of times there's bad blood, there's issues, there's backstage stuff, and immediately, well, it's not the best look. When Conor McGregor throws a dolly through a bus, casual fans are going, all right, I got to see
what's going on.
And I think it speaks volume when I'm here at work and McGregor's about to fight Habib, and a person who I will not name, who I'm not going to name, goes, hey, does this guy have a shot against McGregor this week? I go, does he have a shot? Does McGregor have the shot? That's the question. But if you get in the sport, like I would have been that guy 6 years ago saying, all right, they're hyping up this guy. Does he have a shot? And that's the best thing about what ESPN or what the UFC does. They hype up these matchups and these guys, and yeah, hardcore sit there and go, I don't know. I think you're hyping up the wrong guy.
It's funny you mentioned that because then that gives Habib the shine. So now everyone knows who Habib is because they were locked into the Conor fight. They watched Habib for the most part dominate in what was actually his most contested fight. But now he takes on Tony Ferguson, and a lot of people don't know who Tony Ferguson is. They're asking the question: does Tony Ferguson have a chance? He does.
Yeah, no, I mean that's going to be his toughest fight. Should be, at least on paper. But it's the gambling angle of this whole thing too should not be lost on us, because I think if this were to happen 3 years ago, I don't think the UFC is able to gain the eyeballs that it is right now.
Sure.
When you were going to put money down on something, the odds of you actually watching that thing go up because you want to see if your investment ends up, you know, bringing some friends
I'm not throwing money on something that I don't get a chance to, you know, live and die with, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to kind of give the metaphor. I'm curious because that's a great point you bring up with the fact that you can bet on this thing now. Is this a sustainable...
Is coronavirus one word or two?
I think it's one. I think it's one.
Is it one?
I've been putting it up as one.
I think it's one.
Okay, continue. Sorry. Had to ask that.
Is this a...
It's just us.
If they get a chance to boom a little bit, right? Or boom a lot of bit, I think is their hope. Is this a sustainable method when the other sports come back. Like, for a guy like myself who will watch the big fights and is a casual fan, if I were to dive into it, could you picture me staying with it when the NBA and the NHL and all that comes back?
I could see someone making this one of their top four sports. With the masses, it will probably never eclipse like the fifth sport, because unfortunately what happens is fighters get old, they lose their jaw. Essentially, by losing their jaw, we mean they get knocked out easier. They just don't have it anymore. And then when that happens, when you lose your favorite fighter, sometimes people just fall out of the sport.
That's funny. And that actually happened with me in NASCAR. I used to be a big NASCAR fan, and then as soon as my favorite driver retired, I can't get back into NASCAR because of my favorite guy. Dead serious, by the way. Mark Martin, shout out to him. Number six car. Drove for Viagra.
He's like 175 years old.
Dude was the man. I mean, he's the whole...
If this lasts for more than 4 hours, call your doctor.
he's the best driver and never went to the Daytona 500. It's a shame. I think to your question, though, so Josh is different because Josh was there... Josh was there when it was like UFC 1 and there legitimately were no rules whatsoever. And it was like, sumo guy versus midget wrestler? Sure, let's have that in a cage. Now there are rules and sanctions and stuff. I was different because, and I told my story earlier, but I was sitting at home one day and I was watching Fox. I was watching some Fox thing. And there's this dude just talking about his ancestors swinging a pickaxe. And I'm like, I don't know who this guy is, but I want to see him fight. And I tried to get in the sport earlier, but I had failed at it. So I end up watching the fight that night. He ends up TKOing the guy. And it was cool. But then he hopped over the cage. And he got into some dude's face who had a scar on his face. I didn't know who he was. And he starts screaming in his face. And I'm like, this dude's the man.
This is it?
I need to find out who wins that fight. Because they're hyping up this guy that I've never heard of, right? Ends up being Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo. And that's the guy who was screaming in his face. But I watched that, you know, I didn't watch a card up until that card. And Jose Aldo ends up getting pulled out, ends up being McGregor Mendez. I watched that whole card. And Josh, you'll remember this, on that card, it's Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald. That fight was incredible. Like, one of the best fights I've ever seen to this day, and I've watched pretty much everything since that. And watching an incredible card like that, it gets you into it. Because you're like, all right, well, now I want to see what they do when they return. Not just this guy, but what they do. And then if there's a huge knockout or there's a surprising thing, then you start following the guys. Because it's not just about who got you into the sport. Then it becomes about, all right, what about the guy who was on the undercard who knocked this guy out and is getting a lot of hype? And then you start rolling into it. And then, one card ends up becoming, all right, I'll check out this weekend card. And then that weekend card turns in. Next thing you know, it's me and Josh sitting there at a Buffalo Wild Wings eating a loaded ice cream at 12:30 at night. That's what it turns into.
So the way to get this thing going is trickle down effect, basically.
Yeah, that. And I think, when there is a bad blood fight, that's what they need to hype up.
So you almost are looking for WWE storylines.
In a way, with
MMA fighting.
In a way, like
it's not a bad way to do it.
The fight that we're all scared that falls through, every single MMA fan will tell you, the first thought when coronavirus hit was this Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson fight, which we've been waiting for years, has fallen through five times now under the worst circumstances. One dude eats tiramisu, fight falls through. Another dude ends up tripping over a cable cord the day before the fight, tears his ACL, fight falls through. This is the fight where, when it was matched up against Khabib versus Conor, and Josh, you can jump in and correct me if I'm wrong here, that was the fight where it was like, all right, this is great and all because Conor's back, but can we finally get, like, Tony Khabib?
Sure.
Exactly. The fact that this fight might fall through again hurts, but it adds to a storyline because when these two eventually do fight, that and UFC does a great job with this series called The Countdown where they take a pay-per-view card and they basically tell you why you should watch it. And it's they're all on YouTube. But when they do the countdown for this, it's just another added layer to it on top of the fact that these two do not like each other.
Okay.
And they're two of the best, if not, in my opinion, they're the best lightweights in a stacked lightweight division, so...
Well, there you go. That was a lot of UFC information that I honestly did not know, and I appreciate you guys kind of hanging out with us and jumping on and helping us out, because UFC truly is one of the few things left to watch for right now. If you're looking for some live sport entertainment, maybe that's your chance to get in. And if you do get in, or if you haven't gotten in yet and you want to get in, let's discuss it. 610-632-0975. Of course, as well, all the other topics we've had today throughout the show are on the table. By the way, Pat Egan, coronavirus is two words. I just got confirmation. So I apologize about that. 610-632-0975. We're back on 97.5.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Welcome back to the show. About 90 minutes left here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zoli and Josh Rabick taking you until 8 o'clock. 610-632-0975. This weekend's programming is brought to you by BetRivers.com. Head over to BetRivers.com to play real money casino games from the comfort of your home. At BetRivers.com, you'll find table games that you can play online right on the site. Blackjack, roulette, and more right on your phone for real money. Visit BetRivers.com today and have a little fun. Online casino presented by Rivers Casino Philadelphia. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. So we move on into the later parts of the 6 o'clock hour here. Had a nice conversation with the guys here about this what could be a boom for the UFC and for MMA in general. I am, like I've made mention many times, I'm not a UFC guy. I'm not necessarily, I wouldn't call myself a fan, a casual watcher, I guess I would call myself. But I think this is a good opportunity for a lot of people like myself to learn a little bit more about the sport, learn a little bit more about the UFC in general. And really, to me, Pat made a good point by bringing up his old favorite NASCAR driver. This is a good opportunity for people of the same ilk as myself to find their new favorite fighter and latch on and see how it goes from there. I think that's not a bad way to look at it. And Pat Egan finally out of here for the night. Tell your new family I said hello. They're apparently pretty nice people. I think it's a really good chance for people to kind of get into this sport for the first time. 610-632-0975. We do have just the championship left officially. It happened a little bit ago, but we were talking about the UFC, so I didn't want to derail that conversation. Officially, the championship is set. The 1989 San Francisco 49ers are set to take on the 1985 Chicago Bears in a battle of two really, really good teams. The Bears, of course, known for that staunch defense. The 49ers were just an offensive juggernaut. I mean, they had a good defense as well, but that 89 49ers offense between Jerry Rice and Joe Montana, Roger Craig, the running back. That was a good team, man. They were 14-2. They beat the 15-1 1984 San Francisco 49ers to win the whole to win their side of the bracket, I should say. Number one scoring offense in the league, number three scoring defense in the league. They beat the Denver Broncos 55-10 in the Super Bowl. It was just a total annihilation. So we've been talking about that, so when you give us a call about some of our other stuff, you actually, the next caller on the line will give us a chance to pick our championship. That's a pretty good honor to have. So you get the chance to be part of the championship round when you give us a call at 610-632-0975. We're also talking about the NFL CBA as it was officially voted on today. Not only are players split on this, there are people in the media, people on sports talk radio, people that just on Twitter that are split on this. And it's kind of weird to see because usually it's one way or the other. Usually people love it or they hate it. There's a lot of split on this new NFL CBA as currently constructed. Tyrone Johnson, I know, is not really thrilled about it. He put up a tweet earlier today, said, "Terrible news, but sports news nonetheless," on the tweet that said, "NFL players have voted to approve ratification on the new CBA by a vote tally of 1,019 to 959. The result comes after a long and democratic process with accordance to our Constitution. An independent auditor received submitted ballots through a secure electronic platform, then verified, tallied, and certified the results." That is one thing that we said earlier in the show, that this was the democratic way to do it. I mean, they took a vote. The vote was cast. It won by a total of, what is that, 70? I can't do math. Is that 70 or 60? 60. It won by 60 votes. It's why we're not in a math field here, Josh. It's why we talk sports. It won by 60 votes, but it won by enough, 51.5% to 48.5%. And the talking points really are threefold. It's the addition of a 17th regular season game with the subtraction of the fourth preseason game. It'll take us down to three preseason games. It is the addition of a playoff team in each conference, and it is also the subtraction of a bye. So now only the one seed will get a bye in each of the tournaments. I shouldn't say the tournaments, in each of the playoffs. So one thing that, we talked about earlier in the show was that a lot of times these seven seeds aren't built to be in the playoffs. They don't deserve to be a playoff team. So what I would I was considering during the break is one thing I wanted to talk about was if we go back and take a look at the NFL playoffs last year as they were constructed and how things would change if a seven seed was added to each of the playoffs. Josh, I'm going to give you some of these games. You can tell me, would it change at all? Would the outcome change? Would anything within the playoffs themselves change? So the addition of the seven seed would add the LA Rams in the NFC and the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC. It would take away the byes for the Green Bay Packers, and it would take away the bye for the Kansas City Chiefs. In either of those two matchups, do you see Kansas City losing to Pittsburgh at home, or did you see? Would you see Green Bay losing to the Rams at home?
The Rams on the right day, the right circumstance. We saw a 7-9 Seahawks team, what they could do years ago. There's a chance for that.
They were at home, though. That's correct. The only difference. The Rams would be on the road.
Well, no, I completely understand everything with that, but it still is the NFL, and we do see inferior teams all the time go on the road and still come out with wins.
Okay.
So whenever we look at like the old Giants or Ravens teams that went on their runs in the Super Bowl during the regular season, you'll make the argument they were the inferior team, but they were in. They got in, and they played their way in. So I would say in the AFC, though, there's no shot with the Steelers against the Chiefs because as much of a proponent as I am with a well-rounded team,
it was a good defense.
Once the Chiefs start scoring, they score in bunches, even against good defenses. And my fear is I don't think the Steelers can even keep it close. Once the Chiefs start scoring and they make it a double-digit game, the game's just going to get out of control.
Okay. So let's go through the Rams' regular season from last year. They were 9-7. I'm just going to give you their road games. They beat the Carolina Panthers on the road by 3 to begin this season. They then 2 weeks later beat the Cleveland Browns by a touchdown in Cleveland. They started the season 3-0. Their first road loss came in that 30-29, I think might have been Monday Night Football game against the Seattle Seahawks. 2 weeks later, they went to Atlanta and beat them 37-10. So they started the season on the road 3-1. Went to Pittsburgh and lost 17-12. Went to Arizona and won 34-7. So that makes them 4-1 on the road. Went to Dallas, lost 44-21. The next week, went to San Francisco and lost 34-31. That makes them 4-3. I'm missing a game somewhere. Cardinals win, so 1-3, 2-3, 2-4, 3-6. Okay, so they were 4-4 on the road. They were 4-4 on the road this year. Would have played, like we said, the Green Bay Packers at home, at Lambeau Field. The Packers on the flip side, at home, beat the Vikings, beat the Broncos, lost to the Eagles. So they're 2-1. Beat the Lions, beat the Raiders. The Lions' win was that game the Lions should have won but had called back because of the penalty, but they won nonetheless, so that's 5-1. Beat the Panthers 6-1, beat the Skins 7-1, beat the Chicago Bears, 6-1, beat the Chicago Bears 7-1. That was a 7-1 home team, and their only loss was to the Eagles, who were in desperate need of a win at that point.
On a short week as well.
On a short week. I can't fathom a team that went 7-1 at home and 13-3 overall, losing to a Rams team that was inconsistent.
Yeah, most likely they're winning that game. All I'm saying is I think the Packers are probably one of the most overrated two seeds we've seen in quite some time. I think that's been a lot of talk of that team.
Oh, I agree with that.
So I'd probably say, yeah, most likely Packers probably move on.
All right, fair enough. 610-632-0975. We'll continue the conversation on the CBA as they add some new wrinkles to the NFL that will take shape over the next couple of weeks. What is your favorite jersey of all time? Specifically, what is your favorite throwback jersey of all time? We're discussing that as well. And finally, we have our championship matchup to announce. It's the 1985 Chicago Bears versus the 1989 San Francisco 49ers. A couple of things that I also want to get to on the other side is I know that we have no NCAA tournament to speak of, but Joe Lunardi helps us out by putting out, I guess, what would have been his bracket. I'm going to take a look more into it on the other side. His 2020 seeding is officially out as of 7 minutes ago, so we'll touch that on the other side a little bit, and into the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to have a conversation on a hypothetical NCAA tournament that will not be. 610-632-0975. We're here until 8 o'clock. He's Josh Rabick. I'm Tyler Zuli. We're right here on 97.5.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Yes, we are back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. I just had my first taste of bad time management here. And what I mean by that was, so when we went to the break, I went to go get a snack from the vending machine. And I'm a big fan of the Nature Valley granola bars. I think they're probably one of the premier snacks we have in our vending machine here. And I bought it, you know, and I opened it up and I got the first, it comes in a pack of two. Ate the first one, no problem. Second one, I was beginning to eat as the bump back music started to come on. And I had to like get in Josh's ear just to let him know I'm struggling to finish chewing my granola bar.
Great snack. The issue is when you get to the second bar, it starts to get a little bit drier.
A little bit dry.
Goes
yeah.
down slower, yeah.
And my mouth is a little bit dry right now. So Joe Lunardi has put out what he would have done for us today, with today having been the date selected for Selection Sunday. He has officially put out his 2020 seeding list. And he put out, obviously, 1 to 16 in all four brackets, all that good things. And in the nature of it being Selection Sunday, he put the bracket together with the first four out and the next four in and all that good stuff. I'm looking at the seating list, and I'm trying to kind of poke holes in the seating list. And usually 1 through 4 is pretty concrete because it's any conference winner, it's rankings, you know, you could pretty much go 1 through 16, and that could be 1 through 4 seeds. So Kansas would have been his top number one seed, followed by Gonzaga, Baylor, and Dayton as the top seeds. San Diego State would have been the top two, Seton Hall the top three, Maryland was the top four. Then you kind of get into that like 5 to 10 range where it's would have been teams that weren't conference winners that were at large bids. That's where you can kind of start to say, were these teams fairly ranked? And the one team in particular that I think got a raw deal. Not in who they would play, because I think they'd win this matchup, but the got a raw deal in their seeding, and I thought I'd refuse to say this, but it's the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Joe Lunardi has them as a 9 seed. I thought that they were closer to a 7 seed. Now, granted, the difference between 9 and 7 is really are you playing the 8 or are you playing, you know, the 10, and I look at some of the 10s, and I wonder, would the 10s provide a tougher matchup than the 8s currently do for a team like Rutgers? But I always like to go back and take a look at some of these seedings and say, you know, especially when we have the seedings, who got underseeded, who got overseeded? Rutgers got underseeded. I think that there are 7. When it comes to teams that got overseeded, I look at, quite frankly, I look at Penn State as a 6. 4 weeks ago, actually, that's not true. Probably 2 weeks ago, they were a 3 seed. So I think they got underseeded as well. They probably should have been closer to a 5. Team that got overseeded, I think the Auburn Tigers as a 5 probably should have been a 6 or a 7. That's just my opinion. But I always like to have these kind of hypothetical conversations. Josh, are you a big college basketball guy?
Between just us two girls just chatting on the radio
just me and you anyway.
Yeah, right. Most years, I am. This past year, I just didn't get around to it as much, especially with the exposure of like UFC. I didn't get to as many games, so probably about 30 games this year I saw.
I have openly said that in years past, I've watched more college basketball than I probably had time to watch college basketball. And last year, my bracket was pathetic. I mean, so bad. So this year, I took a step back. This year, I watched less. I mean, to say that I watched none, that's just not true. But to say that I've watched less, that's probably pretty fair. It was refreshing to not feel the need to watch, you know, like a game between UCLA and Oregon State at 11:30 at night on a Tuesday night. But at the same time, I felt like something a little bit of my night was missing some nights. This was going to be the year to me that anybody could win.
Right.
There was like 15 or 16 teams that I could pick and say, yeah, I could see them making a run. From the number one seeded Kansas to that 9th-seeded Rutgers. Was Rutgers going to win the tournament? Maybe not. But did they have the talent to make a run? Yeah, absolutely. I look at a 9-seed Rutgers. How about a 10-seed Marquette with maybe one of the best single players in Howard on the roster? A 10-seed Utah State. Not a lot of people know about that team. That team was pretty darn good. An 11-seed NC State beat Duke early in the season. Good team. I think a lot of the conference winners also had a shot. Somehow 12-seeded Texas got in and 12-seed Richmond. I think both those teams stunk. So Joe Lunardi puts out his bracket today, what would have been his bracket. So if you want to take a look at it on Twitter, you can obviously find him at ESPN Lunardi. He is the quintessential bracketology guy. I mean, if you're looking for what his bracket was, the likelihood that the NCAA probably had the same thing, almost concrete. So if you're trying to get a fix and see what a bracket would have looked like based on Joe Lunardi, that's a pretty good look. That's the way to do it.
Let me ask you, since we're on the topic, don't you think it does help to maybe watch highlights, stay clued in on these teams, but maybe stay away from watching so many games? Because isn't it so difficult to go against higher seeds like the 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s that you've seen so many times, and you know they're ranked there for a reason, and they've proven they're some of the best teams in the nation? Isn't it difficult to say, yeah, I can see Akron going through them with a big upset?
That's a good question, because I mean, you mentioned Akron. That's not a good team, but
right.
But I get your point. I'm just.
Well, no. Like, I mean, the point is, they made the dance. They very well could have like a Sweet 16 run, and it's like, wow, didn't see that coming because you watched the games.
Right. So, that's a fair question, and I think that when you take a step back and you trust the experts, it actually oftentimes helps you to just, these guys are locked in for you. Now, you being locked in is going to help you for sure, but these guys are, I mean, their singular job is to watch these college basketball games. We as sports radio guys, our job is to watch as much as we can, spread the wealth between the four major sports, college sports, all that good stuff. Our job is to be cultured and watch movies, listen to music, because when you do when you have a forum like this, you don't talk hard-hitting sports 24/7. You have some fun. You talk different conversations. So we are expected to have a wealth of knowledge. These guys are expected to watch all of the games. So I think that reading up on them and listening to them and trusting them while doing your own research is the best way to go.
And it's funny because if you look at all the brackets in your pool once they get revealed, everybody has essentially four or five of the same upsets right. in the first two rounds.
Right. I mean, when I'm going to go back and take a look. In fact, I'm going to pull it up right now before we hit the break. I'm going to go back and take a look at the 2019 NCAA tournament. Because to me, when the bracket gets announced, it's almost immediate. You're like, yeah, okay, that 12-5 matchup, that 14-3 matchup, those are the ones you can almost pinpoint right away and go, those are the ones that are destined for an upset. Last season, Liberty over Mississippi State seemed to be a surefire lock. Liberty won the game. Let's try to find another one. Murray State over Marquette. That was a tough one because Marquette was probably the better team. Murray State had John Moran. That's a tough one right there. Let's see. What do we have any other ones that were pretty prevalent? Trying to find one that was that actually happened. UC Irvine over K-State. K-State didn't score enough to keep up with UC Irvine, even if Irvine wasn't the more talented team. Oregon over Wisconsin. You're right. Those kind of, the ones that seem to be over and over and over again, everybody's got five or six. There's five or six every year. Your job is to pick the two or three that win. And that's where it really comes down to what you watch. Did you watch the Sun Belt Conference tournament? Because if you did, you probably knew that Liberty was pretty good. 610-632-0975. We'll get into more of that on the other side. I'm going to give you some individual matchups, Josh. We'll take a look at some of those 12-5s and the 13-4s and the 14-3s. I'll give you a couple. We'll see if you and I agree on which team might have won as we roll into the 7 o'clock hour. Josh Ravick's producing the show and co-hosting tonight. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you up until 8 o'clock right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Just about 7:03 here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Thanks for hanging out with Josh Rabick and myself, Tyler Zulli, until 8 o'clock. You know, it's we talked a little bit about the Selection Sunday, or what used to be Selection Sunday, and how we were kind of really looking forward to the bracket being announced. I know that the NCAA did not officially announce its bracket. It's a good idea. I think it really is a good idea to not announce the bracket. It stinks, but you know what? Actually, I've never done this before, but I think I want to actually almost change my mind mid-sentence. I've never been on the air and changed my opinion about something the way, like, middle of me saying it. I don't think it's a good idea. And the reason I say I don't think it's a good idea is because when the bracket gets announced, I know this doesn't help the players at all, and we have oftentimes taken way too little stock in college athletes because they don't get paid and they are expected to perform at a professional-like level despite the fact that they are not professionals. But when the bracket gets announced, coaches get bonuses, players get recognition, teams, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think schools get a small bonus as well for making the tournament. I think it would have helped a lot of people. For the most part, we know who is going to make the tournament. A lot of the teams. Now, of course, you get the conference tournaments, you know, that may change things up like that. But for the most part, we know a lot of the at-large teams that are going to make it. I think a lot of those coaches deserve their bonuses, especially with teams. Think about teams like Dayton. Dayton has never been a one seed in the history of their school. This is the best team by far Dayton's ever put together. They deserve something for that. Now, Josh, I said to you before the break, we're going to take a look at some of the 12-5 matchups, some of the 13-4 matchups, and some of the 14-3 matchups. I'm going to tell you the matchup. I'm not going to give you the line because I think the line may sway your opinion because I know lines sway my opinion now. So I'll give you the matchup of all of those in the East, West, South, and North. You tell me if it's prime for an upset or not. Five seed at Butler taking on the winner of the play-in game between Texas and Richmond.
Butler.
Okay, so does it sway your opinion that if Texas were to win, they'd be they would actually be a half a point favorite over Butler?
It does a little bit, right? Once you get in the line, it's funny.
Because I don't think Texas is very good. I didn't think Texas was good all year.
Right.
But the minute you start throwing lines out there, Vegas knows something. So it's weird because Texas, to me, is not a good team. And I thought Butler was a decent team all year.
I wanted to double down. And once you told me that, I was like, no, I can't.
Okay. Four-seeded Maryland over your guys, 13-seeded Akron.
Once again, I really wanted to double down, go with Akron, but Maryland's a team I watched a decent bit here of the few teams, and I like Maryland.
Maryland minus... Oh, you know what? I apologize. I'm sorry. I read that line wrong. The half a point line is Texas favorite over Richmond in the play-in game.
Okay.
That makes more sense. Because I was looking at it, and it had Boston U minus 2.5 and then Dayton. And I'm like, no, that kid, that's clearly not right. So that is the play-in game line. So we go back to Texas Butler. Now how do you feel about it?
Now I want to go with Butler, okay, considering that Texas doesn't have Mike's secret stuff.
Okay. Maryland Akron.
Maryland.
Okay. Maryland would be an 8-point favorite in that game.
Makes sense.
The 14 versus 3. Nova and Hofstra.
See, I don't know much about Hofstra this year, though. That's where I kind of run into the issues with some of like the more mid-major type of teams, which Hofstra's a well-known mid-major.
So Hofstra, of course, is out of the Colonial. They were the top-ranked team in the Colonial, but I want to take a look at the standings because, you know, a lot of times you look at some of these mid-majors, and they do really well within conference play. You know, they go like 15-2 in conference play, and their regular season record is... 19-12 because they played a tough non-conference schedule. Hofstra, not the case. Hofstra was 14-4 within the Colonial, overall 26-8. So you've got a 26-win team taking on Villanova. Change your mind at all?
I mean, if I went through all these other games and I kept picking the favorite, I would consider Hofstra here. But I still got to go with Villanova if I'm just comparing them side by side.
All right, so you go with chalk in the three games that are considered the big upset games. Because, like, I don't consider 9 beating an 8 an upset. Seeding-wise, it is, but I don't consider that.
Yeah, because they can vary. They can flip-flop, like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we talked about it earlier. That was one of the things I looked at where... I said the, which 9 seed that I thought? Oh, Rutgers being better than Colorado. I thought Rutgers was better than Colorado. And that's not how it ended up playing up. They had Florida against Colorado. But if Rutgers was going up against Colorado as the 9 seed, that's not an upset to me. And in fact, Florida as the 9 seed would have been a 5.5-point favorite over Colorado. That's not an upset. Let's move on to... the South region. So here are your three matchups we have discussed. 5-seed Ohio State versus the 12-seed Stephen F. Austin.
I'm going to go Stephen F. Austin here.
To win outright?
To win outright.
Okay, so there's your 12-seed. Again, we've kind of played this way throughout the whole thing.
Outright!
Does the 11.5-point Ohio State line change your mind?
100%.
It's a lot.
100%.
That's a lot of points, man. that is a ton of points. Now, obviously, we've only looked at the two brackets so far. That is significantly higher than the other 5-12 matchup.
And what you're seeing from me right now is when you don't have the articles that come out during Selection right. Sunday of this is the team you have to watch for in the mid-majors, and this team is a problem for this power conference team because of these matchup issues.
Right, and that's the thing is, you know, Stephen F. Austin is still a good team, but I wonder if Stephen F. Austin gets the pull because of the run they made from a few seasons ago.
100%. It's name recognition. Yeah,
and that's it. The thing is, you can only be an underlying mid-major for so long. Like, the team that I always think about as an underlying mid-major, I said this with Joe Torti, is New Mexico State. And the reason that New Mexico State remains underlying is because they win 30 games every year, and I never feel comfortable in picking them. So they remain underlying. Stephen F. Austin, on the meanwhile, has pulled some upsets in the past. VCU was that team for a while.
Let me ask you, so we mentioned teams like a VCU, we can go into like a George Mason, anything like that. But Gonzaga technically falls in there. They're usually a high seed, but Gonzaga doesn't go on a lot of deep runs. It's so weird.
Last year was Gonzaga's best team, and there is a lot of claim that this Gonzaga team is better than last Gonzaga team. Mark Few's done a tremendous job with that program. Did you know that Gonzaga has been to the NCAA finals, or the NCAA tournament, I think 29 times in their existence, and they've gone 26 consecutive times, I think it was?
Yeah, it makes sense. I can't remember the last time they didn't make dance.
Right? I mean, when you think about that conference, it's them, St. Mary's, and a third team. And a lot of times that third team is San Francisco.
Well, it's weird to watch them, say, in a conference tournament against San Francisco, struggle against them, and then me also have the confidence in saying, okay, yeah, but when the tournament happens, you know, it was a conference game. It, you know, sometimes you play down to these teams, rivalry games, all that stuff you throw in the mix. And then say they meet at Kansas somewhere, you know, later down the road where you get these higher power seeds, and me say, yeah, I think Gonzaga's going to go through them, and I think Gonzaga's winning the ship.
I'd be interested to see if that team can ever actually win a championship. I mean, by numbers, you would think that they should, but it will certainly be interesting to find out. Hey, by the way, real quick, this is totally side topic. We have the finals coming up for the bracket. Speaking of brackets, our Super Bowl bracket is in its finals. Can you do me a favor? And while we continue to discuss this, can you tweet from the station account the final matchup between the 1985 Bears and the 1989 San Francisco 49ers? And we can run it for the next, run it for a half an hour. And that way we can pick the winner before we get off the air. Josh, you're the man. Thank you so much. While Josh does that, we'll continue this conversation.
Chase Utley, you are the man.
You know, you're not supposed to do that to yourself. You're supposed to let the other people tell you you're doing a great job. And then you downplay it.
I'm not Chase Utley.
You're not Harry Callis either, so I guess you're good.
Yeah, I'm good. Now, I don't think anybody was mixing me up with either one of those.
All right,
two.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You've made your point. We continue this conversation. We've kind of shifted a little bit because Joe Lunardi, over the last 20 minutes or so, has put out his, I guess you'd call it a hypothetical bracket. I mean, you wouldn't call it that. It is a hypothetical bracket because there is no NCAA tournament this year. We are all majorly bummed out about the fact that we're not going to get a chance to watch March Madness. But on the same side, it is all about precaution and player safety and fan safety, employee safety. Quite honestly, it's all about human safety. And this thing, we don't know how far-reaching this thing's going to get. We don't know how severe this thing's going to get. I am okay with all of sports being shut down until we can figure things out a little bit. 610-632-0975. We're going to continue this bracket conversation in just a moment. The one team, and they're actually coming, it's actually funny. I didn't even look at this because I put the bracket away for a second. The one team to me that I thought had a chance at stealing a high-seeded upset was Bradley. And I talked about this with Joe Torti on Friday night. And Joe asked me, Tyler, why do you believe in Bradley? Or why did you believe in Bradley? And it kind of harkens back to that conversation that Josh and I had earlier today, where you have to put a combination of your eye test and the experts' words. You know, you talk about the experts' words, what they write, what they're seeing, and then you put a combination of what you watched on the floor to the test. That was what I had with Bradley. Was I was trusting a lot of the experts on this team with a combination of a couple of the games that I got a chance to watch. I thought they were a pretty good team. Bradley's the 14 seed in the South region. They take on the Michigan State Spartans out of the Big Ten. Any chance at an upset for my Bradley guys here, Josh?
Probably not.
Yeah. Okay, so I agree. I think that this is a down Michigan State team, but at the same time, this is a Michigan State team that, when you look at what their strength is, causes issues for Bradley. They're going to out-rebound them. They're going to out-athleticize, whatever the word would be. They're better athletes than the guys at Bradley. And then this just goes to prove my point. Michigan State would be a 13.5-point favorite over Bradley. So you have, on the surface, taken 112, but the line changed your opinion. No 14 yet, so let's get to the 13-4 matchup. This, for the second year in a row, or maybe the second time in 3 years, that I find I have a lot of faith in a team, in a Vermont Catamounts team, to steal a game in the first round. And then I look at their matchup. They're the 13 seed. I look at their matchup against Louisville. Louisville only a 7.5-point favorite, but I'm very high on this Louisville Cardinals team. I thought that they were really good. They were ranked number one for a point in the regular season. Could Vermont steal one from Louisville, knowing the fact that they're a 7.5-point dog?
They could. We've seen bigger in the past few years, so they have a puncher's chance. They keep it close late. I would probably put my money on them.
All right, so you finally have a 13 seed advancing.
Yep.
Okay, I like that. So let's move on to the West. So we're two brackets down. You have one 13 seed advancing, no 12s and no 14s. Because let me ask you this. Are you shying away from Stephen F. Austin with the line? Are we officially picking Ohio State, or are you officially picking Stephen F. Austin?
I'm going Ohio State. It's just way too big of a line.
All right, so you don't pick Stephen F. Austin. You don't pick Bradley. You do pick Vermont. You did not pick Hofstra. You did not pick Akron, and you did not pick either Texas or Richmond. All right,
correct.
So just one of the 12, 13, 14 moving on so far. So let's move to the West. In the West, you have four-seeded Oregon taking on a team I just spoke about, the number 13 seed New Mexico State. Oregon, I will give you the line in a second. You tell me your initial thoughts.
I'm probably thinking New Mexico State.
Over Oregon.
Over Oregon.
Okay. New Mexico State went undefeated in conference play in the WAC. They were 25-6 this year. And by the way, for what it's worth, they didn't play a conference tournament, of course, but for what it's worth, New Mexico State at one point was 6-6. They finished the year 25-6. They won 19 straight games to end the season.
Yeah, one of the things I like to look for in a team is a team that's peaking at the right time. And there's other situations where we've seen teams where, I forget, it was sometime in the past couple years with Tennessee, who hopped on early. They were looking like they were going to be a one seed most of the way. They sputtered down the stretch. I believe they ended up being like a two
Admiral
seed.
The Schofield team, correct? They finished as a two seed? Yep.
Yep, and it was one of those teams where a lot of us said they were on our radar from the start. And by the time the tournament came, they just weren't the same team that we saw in November and December.
Where were you when I picked them to win the national title?
I'm talking like I'm all smart and everything. I had them going to the Final Four.
They went to the Elite Eight, right? I think they lost in the Elite Eight.
I can't remember if it was the Sweet 16
or the Elite
Eight.
They certainly won a couple games.
Right.
Oregon, by the way, 13-5 in Pac-12, 24-7 overall. They didn't lose a game at home. Did you know that this season, Oregon basketball, men's basketball, Oregon's women's basketball, and Oregon football all went undefeated at home this season? That's actually pretty impressive.
Eugene, man.
Tough place to play. We all know how hard it is to play at Autzen. Autzen's a very difficult stadium to play in. That basketball arena, too, apparently is not a fun place to go. So you are taking the upset. You're going New Mexico State as the 13 seed.
Yeah, I mean, really at this point, too, it's not even always saying, hey, am I picking the better team? Am I picking someone who has a puncher's chance and who's not going to get outclassed?
Right.
And this is one where I go, well, this is a time for me to pick my spot.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go to the 5-12. The undisputed Ivy League champion, because there was no tournament, Yale, we'll take on the 5-seed Michigan. This Yale team is pretty good. It's funny. I said this with Joe the other night. If there was going to be a conference tournament, Yale was not going to win the conference tournament. Harvard was going to win the conference tournament. But the way that Yale is set up, I think that Yale could win a tournament game before winning the Ivy League. If that's if that makes any sense, it's totally convoluted, but I feel that way.
We were just talking about one of those weird matchup things that you look for in the first round, and that's kind of, I guess, what you're speaking to.
So, 12-5, Yale, Michigan.
All that being said, I'm going Michigan.
7-point spread, change that?
No, I'm going to stay with Michigan.
All right, so you've got the 5-seed Michigan moving on. The last 14-3 of the West is the 14-seed Eastern Washington taking on the 3-seed Seton Hall. This, to me, is a game that I think people are going to look at the Big Sky standings. Now, I'm going to go take a look because I admittedly don't watch the Big Sky. Eastern Washington is 23-8. They went 16-4 within conference play. And they also... I thought that I was going to say they won 19 straight, but that was actually New Mexico State. They won 7 straight to finish the season. Seton Hall, on the other hand, is clearly the more talented team. But the knock on Seton Hall this year is the fact that they were an inconsistent team at times. They were 21-9. They beat Nova at Nova. But they also lost to Xavier. I think they also lost to... No, they didn't lose to DePaul. Okay, I thought they lost to DePaul. They did lose to Xavier, however, and they lost to Nova at home, lost to Creighton twice. Does this game... does the sheer talent of Seton Hall do it for you?
It doesn't, and... Me not trusting them would also play into seeing, okay, what's the line? This is one where I set myself up for what's the line, and let's see if we can pull the trigger on the upset.
Okay, so let's give you the line. Seton Hall minus 10.5.
I'm probably going to take Seton Hall then, and it's just, and this is also just part of my strategy too when I go with this, knowing that people are probably going to have Seton Hall going into at least the Sweet 16. So the last thing you want to do is take some random shots on big upsets here and whiff.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. And that's the thing is I look at Seton Hall, and despite the fact that I said they were inconsistent this year and they were 21-9 and they were third in the Big East, it's a team that I think could have done a lot of damage. I think their talent... You talked about the Rams, you know, on the right day and the right thing, could have stolen a game from Green Bay. If Seton Hall were to have gotten by Eastern Washington, they would play the winner of BYU-Indiana. I think they probably would have won that game, too. Then they would have drawn the 2-seed San Diego State, who's a legit team. But, man, I think Seton Hall's good. I think they're really good. All right, I think I would have taken them. I don't know. I look at this bracket, and it's Gonzaga 1, San Diego State 2, Seton Hall 3.
Are you debating about sending them to the Final Four right
now? Yeah. Yeah, I really am. I'm back and forth on trying to decide if I think that they're a Final Four team or not. Like, Gonzaga, to me, is the most complete team. And San Diego State's pretty darn good, too, but Seton Hall's pretty good.
It's like how every year you have your smartest guy in the room team that you pick that you think you right. have is an outlier that's going to separate you from everybody in the bracket.
Yeah, that was Arizona for me a couple years ago. They lost to Buffalo in the first round. All right, we've got one more bracket to get through, one more side of the bracket to get through, but we are a little bit tied up against the break, so we'll come back and finish the Midwest. We've got one more 12-5, one more 13-4, one more 14-3 to get through. And we'll get Josh's opinion on all of it as we come back here. We're hanging out until 8 o'clock. He's Josh Rabick. You just heard him. I'm Tyler Zulli. We're taking you until 8 right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic's business of sports is powered by Pico for Business.
Well, the men's college basketball tournament has been canceled. But one thing it doesn't change is how critical these 3 weeks are for the NCAA's total annual revenue. According to Investopedia, the 2018 tournament generated $933 million, or 75% of the NCAA's total annual revenue. Where does almost $1 billion go? The NCAA, a nonprofit organization, keeps just about 4%. That's still a healthy $37 million. The rest gets split among the Division I membership. It's paid to conferences like the ACC or the Big Ten. And the further the schools go, the more money flows to that school's division. One entity that makes zero of the nearly $1 billion? The Players.
The Fanatics Business of Sports is powered by Pico for Business. Take advantage of Pico's energy efficiency program incentives that can help you reduce your energy consumption. Pico.com/more savings.
Mom, delivery.
You've been loading up on things from Walmart.
Yeah, I used my new Capital One Walmart Rewards card. It earns unlimited 5% back on everything I buy from Walmart online.
Say what?
5% back.
Say what?
5% back. Say what now?
5% back.
With what? The Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. Earn unlimited rewards, including 5% back at Walmart online on top of Walmart's everyday low prices. What's in your wallet?
Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One USANA.
It's Macy's one-day sale with deals of the day priced so low you don't need a coupon. Like 60% off kids' clothes from Epic Threads and more. Plus, get all the home essentials you need, like cookware from top brands, just $19.99. Three-piece comforter sets now $18.99. And eight-piece bed ensembles for $37.99. And get 60 to 65% off Samsonite and Travel Pro luggage. Now, Star Rewards members can earn rewards even faster during Star Money Bonus Days. Friday through Sunday. Savings off sale prices. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Mark Farzetta here. Would you like a greener, weed-free lawn that is also safer for your family and your pets? Choose My Guys at Natural Lawn of America. That's my lawn care company, and it should be yours, too. Natural Lawn uses safer, organic-based products that reduce the amount of chemicals used on your lawn. This creates a safer lawn for me, my family, pets, and everyone to enjoy. And with Natural Lawn, you don't have to sacrifice beauty for safety. Oh, no. For over 30 years, Natural Lawn has been growing greener grass and fewer weeds using their exclusive organic-based lawn care program. This is not some cookie-cutter lawn care service. Natural Lawn certified technicians customize their treatments to your lawn's specific need. Whether you live in PA or New Jersey, Natural Lawn's programs will deliver you a lush green lawn. And listen to this. Right now, they have a special deal for our listeners. Schedule Natural Lawn's full-service program and receive free seeding every year. Again, that's free seeding every year. Call Natural Lawn today and tell them Mark sent you. Call 800-FREE-SEED. That's 800-FREE-SEED. Choose My Lawn Care Company. Natural Lawn of America. Greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed.
Grab a Labatt Blue or Blue Light today at your favorite local bar or beer distributor and find out why it's the number one Canadian selling beer in the world. Labatt Blue is brewed with the finest ingredients with a clean, refreshing taste with a distinct hop aroma, delicate fruit flavor, and slightly sweet aftertaste. Labatt Blue Light provides a light Canadian pilsner with a slight sweetness and citrus-like hop character that's fresh, crisp, and brewed to the highest quality standards. Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light, official import beer of the Philadelphia Flyers. Always drink responsibly.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Velo has arrived. It's the modern take on nicotine. Hassle-free nicotine pouches made for everywhere you're headed. So whether you're on a client visit or a girls trip, traveling to your favorite spots or crossing another city off your bucket list, flying back to see the fam, or road tripping to parts unknown, whatever your destination, Velo's ready. Visit Velo.com now to find your retailer. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Underage sale prohibited.
Sports Talk for Haddon Heights and all of Camden County. 97.5, The Fanatic.
Minutes left here on 97.5 The Fanatic, at least for myself and Josh Rabick. By the way, Josh is doing yeoman's work today. He's producing the show. He's taking calls. He's serving his co-host. Got to give props to Josh today. Now, see, here is where you can play the Chase Utley, You Are the Man, because we give you a lot of props.
No, I just want to stay humble now.
Okay, now I'm...
A better man told me I should be humble.
It certainly wasn't me. I'm not a good person by any means. 610-632-0975. We've kind of run the gamut today of different topics of conversation. We started out the show, and that's kind of been our main topic today, is the NFLPA agreeing to the CBA, in which the main topics, main talking points, and I think it should dive deeper than this, but unfortunately, a lot of times it does not. The main topics for us, the talking points, are threefold. It's the addition of a 17th game and the elimination of the fourth preseason game, the addition of a seventh playoff team, and the elimination of one of the byes. So now we're down to just one bye in each of the AFC and the NFC. Again, it's I think all changes that I'm just not super thrilled with. And I understand why people like to have more another week of competitive football. I understand why people like to have another playoff team. I just disagree. I think it's like a vehemently disagree.
It feels like they're ruining such a perfect thing, too. Like, it's such a perfect format and setup. It's similar to the person who ruins the perfect relationship, who says, I need to make this better, and there's ways to make it better, and I'm a big fan of always looking to progress the sport, but I look to some of the XFL rule changes that they could have cherry-picked things similar to what the XFL did that I think would have went much further.
You know, it's funny you bring up the XFL, because in the previous iteration of the XFL, and in previous, I don't want to call them minor leagues, but the smaller football leagues that have built up, I had no takeaway. Like, the XFL, we always have fond memories of the kick return and, you know, he hate me and all that stuff. But I don't have any takeaway from the actual football product. Tommy Maddox was the MVP. I couldn't tell you who won. His team, I would assume, won the championship, but I couldn't tell you what team he played for. But I look at that, I look at those leagues, and there's really been no football sticking points to me. This XFL, before it had to cancel its games, there were some points that I said that the NFL probably might want to consider. I thought that the on-field, I don't want to say aggressive, but the more assertive interviewing process was really interesting. It gave us kind of like that over-the-shoulder feel, like mic'd up kind of feel to the players. In which, by the way, not only did they do that, but for the most part, they successfully did that without airing any expletives or curses. The first week, it was the only week I remember hearing a curse on the air. The product itself wasn't tremendous, because you're only going to go as far as the quarterback play, but it was more sustainable. I thought that league, this is probably a death sentence for that league, but I thought that league had the best chance of success out of all the smaller football leagues.
Certainly, and with the network deals that you had, which you had all these big players, a lot of Disney-related big players, you have the season ticket sales that did much better than they did the first time around, and I think they had more of a grasp as far as their pay wage for the players as
well. They weren't making a, you know, exuberant amount of money, but they were making a decent pay. And I think that, too, the league would have had a lot of success if they would have been able to find a way to formulate a connection with the NFL. As almost as a feeder league, to say, you know, because here's what would have given them the sustained success. The NFL obviously does not let players declare for the draft until X amount of time. You know, either till they're 21 or they're after their junior year. The XFL would have been wise to take players and go, hey, you can come play for us after your freshman year, and everybody's contract has an NFL out where you sign a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal, but if you get selected in the NFL draft, you've got an out. And serve as almost a feeder program for the NFL. That would have been success. Because eventually the NFL would have chipped in money. I think that's probably how the way it would have gone.
I just don't see Vince McMahon wanting to actually partner up with another. You know how Vince McMahon is and how he actually took a hold of wrestling.
Course.
What actually made Vince McMahon famous is he put all the local wrestling territories out of business. Obviously thinks really huge. I like the idea of going for the younger players, and obviously they won't be able to offer anywhere close to what the NFL would for rookie players, but I believe they were talking about their star players could make somewhere in the neighborhood of like $1 million to $1.5 million, I think, was where they were kind of pointing at. So the perfect scenario is maybe like a Maurice Claret, who that's one of the most infamous players that ended up in that situation, a freshman who was already a star who then ran into issues and really wasn't meant to be in college.
You probably saw me kind of checking on my phone as you were saying that, and I was listening to what you're saying, but we've got some I don't know how it was expected. It's not crazy news, but the this comes, I guess, breaking from the So let me see. Shira Stein, who covers for Bloomberg Law. She was formerly of the Washington Post. Reports are coming out that the CDC has recommended gatherings of 50 or more now not happen. So the numbers have dropped from, what was it, 150, I think, down to 50.
So what do you do in grocery stores?
It's a great question. What do you, I don't know.
Wow.
That's a huge drop off. Now, I'm going to, okay, so let me read this. So she put in a tweet. It's a recommendation. It's not a mandate. It's a recommendation. It also does not apply to the day-to-day operations of organizations such as schools, institute of higher learning, or businesses. So work-related things are still okay if your office or whatever is still open. Schools may be able to come back in session at some point. But wow, it's down to 50 now.
You have to wonder, too, because we knew this was always going to get worse before. Forget about it getting better, but just plateauing. And it seems like every restriction is coming based off of like the new information that comes in each day.
So, what we said, there's caveats to it, but 50 or more, I mean, even at 150 or more, this was in jeopardy, but this is an 8-week recommendation. 8 weeks takes us to the early part of May. It's a pretty large NFL event that happens in the end of April. Are we going to see an online NFL draft?
Oh, man.
I can't imagine the draft being in person. And again, this is a recommendation. The CDC is making the recommendation. I mean, personally, I would probably listen to them if you're not trying to get a gathering together. But this is going to I got to imagine this now affects the NFL draft. It has to.
Yeah, it's also going to be difficult for them because we don't think the NHL and the NBA are going to resume play if this recommendation is out there. And a lot of these leagues have proven that they followed suit with what the NBA did. It would seem almost irresponsible for the NFL to come back to gather people for something that they essentially tried to monetize an event of the draft, which they've done over the years. But you got to, if the show's going to go on, you got to digitalize it.
Yeah, I think you're gonna see, like, and the thing is, the commissioner and the players won't be in the same spot. I know that Vegas had put together this insane package on the Bellagio fountain where people were going to come in on the boats and everything.
That's right.
It was going to be a lot of fun to watch. I mean, it was going to take forever because the boats don't go that fast, but it was going to be a lot of fun to watch. The fallout here is becoming more and more bleak. Things are going to get better. Believe me, they are. We are going to, as a whole, as a country, as a world, we're going to beat this thing. Tests are becoming more readily acceptable. We're going to beat this thing. I have no doubt about it. But the immediate impact, I mean, it stinks. It really does. Which is cool, which to me, it's cool that we're still here because we get a chance to hang out with people, talk to people, not only talk them kind of through things, but also because you and I aren't experts on this, but we are making an attempt to have some fun, give people a lighter angle. So that, I really like the fact that we're still here.
Right. We're all going through this. We're used to, say, April through, you know, the end of October into the beginning of November. You put on a ball game at night. You have a beer or something, you chill out, you enjoy the weather while the weather's still nice out. Now, unfortunately, we're not really going to get the opportunity to come together, so what we can do through the radio is come together that way.
Yeah, this is a perfect forum to hang out. And I know that people, a lot of people's, especially if they work in an office setting, are working, they're telecommuting, they're working from home, or a lot of the offices, some offices are starting to close completely, and people have the next couple of weeks with no work. We've talked the last couple of days about, you know, what are you watching? What game are you trying to find other games? Are you watching other outlets? Are you watching, you catching up on shows? You're reading books. One of the things that we are still able to provide is live and local radio, which is really cool. And like you said, we're here to get everybody through this together. I will be the first one to tell you, we're not experts. We're not the CDC. We're not, you know, we're here to talk about some fun things. We're here to have sports conversations, like we were breaking down the bracket, and we're here to, you know, look back on old sporting memories, talk about what's your favorite jersey, because that's what we do when there's no sports. We have fun barroom type conversations. That's what we'll continue to do, and I hope that we have some fun over the next couple of weeks. 610-632-0975. We've got one more segment to go, so here's what we've got on the other side. We've got two things left. Josh, we got to break down the Midwest, the three matchups that we're talking about. And also, we have to declare a Super Bowl champion winner because the poll is about to expire in the next couple of minutes. 610-632-0975. We're here with you until 8 o'clock on The Fanatic.
97.5, The Fanatic.
For quality replacement windows and doors, along with personalized guidance and service, connect with Mattis Windows, your Marvin authorized installer.
What can new windows and doors do for you? Turn an old room into a new favorite? Add character? Lower your energy costs? The possibilities are exciting, but can also be daunting. That's why Marvin is with you every step of the way, helping you decide what works best for your home, guiding you through your options for styles and materials, and answering your questions, big or small. With Marvin, we make replacing your windows and doors easier, turning potential into beautiful reality.
Visit Mattis Windows, your local Marvin authorized installer, for the information you need to get started. Be sure to ask us how you can save up to $500 off the installation of new Marvin windows and doors. Visit us in Ardmore or Glenside, Pennsylvania, or at MattisWindows.com. That's MattisWindows.com.
Stand tall. Laugh with your whole body. Sleep well at night. If you've been suffering with chronic back or neck pain, you deserve to do the things that bring you joy again. At the Penn Spine Center, we make you our priority, working diligently and thoroughly to deliver only the right treatment for you. At all of our locations across the region, it's what we stand for. It's another reason why your life is worth Penn Medicine. Discover more at PennMedicine.org/spine.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Got an oil change on your list and a little extra cash in your pocket? We have the deals to help you out. Like 5 quarts of Valvoline Max Life High Mileage Motor Oil and an STP oil filter for just $27.99. And you don't even have to leave the house to get it. Just order online by 10 p.m. on AutoZone.com and choose next day delivery. Getting your job done just got easier. Restrictions and details at AutoZone.com.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Injured on the job? Insurance companies will turn their backs on you.
I deserve better.
Some employers just won't care. I deserve better. Call Martin Law. We wrote the book on workers' comp in Pennsylvania. Call today to arrange a free consultation. Our team will help you get the benefits you deserve. Call 215-587-8400. That's 215-587-8400. Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers for over 40 years.
St. Patrick's Day is BYOB, but you're getting extra lucky. Like finding $5 in your jacket pocket lucky. Like four-leaf clover level lucky. Like golden deals on fine Irish spirits lucky. BYO luck at fine wine and good spirits. And save $3 on both 750 milliliter bottles of Paddy's Old Irish Whiskey and 1.75 liter bottles of Ryan's Irish Style Cream. Offers end March 29th, 2020. Please enjoy responsibly.
Ka-ching! New to BetRivers.com. Play real money slots and table games from anywhere in Pennsylvania. We have all the top Rivers Casino table games you'll love to play, including blackjack, roulette, and baccarat. You'll also love our huge selection of real money slots with online exclusives and your favorites from the casino. Log on to BetRivers.com or sign up today, and we'll match your first deposit up to $250. Start earning rewards today at BetRivers.com. Must be 21 or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Online casino presented by Rivers Casino.
Motley Crue, Def Leppard, The Stadium Tour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.